She was at all that planning in the early days.
Yeah.
All right. Plus, I was able to give him Salmon River LC. So
if the focus is on
their own
Mackenzie, then the report that Nick
Kelly
Morris
Reese
put together
has joined the conference.
That's been released and improved, I think. That's got a comprehensive outplanning record for everything that happened in the South Fork Mackenzie. Going back to DB.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. So, yeah, he bird dogged that or somebody's up there.
Right.
Awesome.
A participant has joined the conference.
We have a couple more minutes before we get started.
Joined the conference.
There we go.
Has joined the conference.
We'll go ahead and get started, and hopefully more of the hatchery managers will join as we begin. First item is just approving last month's minutes. I know we got comments from Ziller.
Who's on the phone?
Oh, yeah, I guess we could do that, too. On the phone, I heard Dave Linhart.
Kirk Kremers.
Yep.
Kirk Kremers. Kelly Reese, is that correct?
Yeah, yep, that's right. I work with Jeff.
Okay, anyone else?
This is Greg from Minto.
Okay. Oh. Anyone else on the phone? In the room we have Cam Sharp, Doug Garlitz, Chad Helms, John Thorpe, Lance Kruzik, myself, Chris Walker, Andy Traylor, and Tammy Mackey. So we got comments from Jeff Ziller and Bernadette and a couple other folks. I wasn't sure if there was any other comments that folks wanted to make regarding the notes that were taken. Otherwise, we'll just finalize them and post them to the web. Easy enough. Moving on to action items. There's a couple items on here related to the Summer Steelhead Work Group, which we've been talking about the last few meetings.
Hey, I mentioned. Chris, this is Dave. Are you going to fire up that web meeting? Or?
Oh, yeah, we can do that. Andy, you want to get that fired up?
Yeah, I'm working on it, Dave.
Okay.
We talked about either last month or the month before that we wouldn't really reconvene the Summer Steelhead Work Group until we had some sort of working draft that we could all work on in regards to the HGMP. Any other thoughts on the Summer Steelhead Work Group in terms of those action items?
We can maybe pick that up at the end of the meeting today under the other category. I think we've got it down there anyways.
Yeah, okay. Next action item, monthly reporting. I know that Cam and Andy have been working on a template to work with. It sounds like we're getting close to having something we can move forward with this year into the season, knowing that there's going to be some changes along the way.
Yeah, we think that basically we're going to launch the first version of it on May 6th, so that'll have all of the April counts everywhere put together, and then first week of May we'll distribute to the work group.
Okay, and then I put an agenda item. I'm not sure if we really need to talk about it much more, but it's on there if there's further discussion needed later on. Next item, Cam, you're going to develop a straw man regarding Leeburg Dam operations. You've done that. We're going to talk about it today. It's on the agenda. And then, Dave, the next item, you were going to send out the PNNL report to folks.
Yeah, I did that right after our last meeting.
Okay. And that was the wild hatchery steelhead interaction study?
Yep. Yep.
And wasn't Bernadette going to provide comments, or someone from ODFW was going to provide comments within 30 days?
30 days, yeah.
Right, just got to.
Yeah, that's what I understood.
So we 30 days left yet?
I don't know.
Probably not quite, but maybe by
right,
next meeting.
I just
meeting.
Got an email from her a couple of days ago asking for comments. And
okay.
So she's compiling.
And then the last action item, just as kind of a status report on the adult release site, Dandy, in terms of what's going on. I know potentially you're going to coordinate maybe a field visit.
Yeah, I haven't had time to do anything on that. Been
okay.
Too busy. But it's in process. I've talked with a couple people about it for identifying new sites. One, you know, from McKinsey, that Cam kind of proposed we should look at. Another one in the North Sandy Am. So yeah, it's just pulling together some folks that might have some ideas about where those should go or different areas to look at, and then narrowing it down, taking it back to that team and the PM, and moving forward either with taking some of the pieces from the sites that don't work that we're not going to use and reusing them at the new sites, or just starting from scratch and building over. So. Hopefully in the next month I'll be able to do that.
Okay.
So by next meeting I should have something for the group.
Okay. Any other questions regarding adult fish release sites from anybody? Okay. Moving on to updates, Greg.
Hey, so Chris, a couple of additional agenda items.
Sure.
I'd like at the very end of the meeting. Make sure we have a few minutes available to talk about HGMPs.
Okay.
And then also, wherever it fits, circling. So last HGMT, we had the presentation from Ryan on the summer steelhead.
Yep.
We should follow up on that topic. We kind of talked about some management implications of that study. And
okay. Yeah, so
let's fit that in somewhere.
Kind of my thoughts, and we could try to fit it in if we can. Was to either have a separate agenda item at a future meeting, or if we can fit it, do it now. But I have it on the agenda as definitely looking at release strategies for the program.
Okay.
To kind of compare, you know, what best management practices are, what we currently do, how we can move forward.
Okay.
Sound okay?
Yep.
All right.
I thought there was an agenda item to talk about the Cougar Dam. Recycling.
There, that's item number 9.
And then, since Jeff can't join us, if he can, he's going to try to call in. He's at that other meeting.
Okay, Kelly's on the line. I don't know if she could.
Yeah,
speak.
And I'm going to snag Jeff when we get to that point.
Do you want to keep it on the agenda?
Hopefully, be able to.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Greg. Marion Forks Minto update.
All right. Everything at Marion Forks is going well. As we talked last time, we spawned all our spring Chinook. Was obviously earlier than normal. No problems with them. Didn't end up with any internal fungus or anything. And they're all happy and well. Everything else at Marion Forks is going well. They're starting to put away their snow equipment, which I'm hoping means we will get some snow. So everybody's just a little concerned up in the upper canyon on what the water's going to look like this year and what that means for fish and stuff. But more to come and see on that. Minto, last week we were able to take advantage of some of those high flows. We got our first two of our acclimation groups released. I'd say about 98% of the fish went out in the first 2 days. Went smooth and easy, so that went out well. They went out at about 3,600 CFS, so I think they got a good push out to the ocean. A little bigger than normal, about 9.8 fish to the pound, which for us is much bigger than normal. Just the warm winter and better rearing conditions, I guess, here at Minto, we were able to get them a little bigger, but they were happy and healthy and went out well. Crap's still in operation. We still have not seen any winter steelhead. I think the last count I saw from Bart was about 30 winter steelhead over Bennett. So we're expecting some any day, but haven't seen any yet. That's about all I got.
All right. Kurt Kremers, McKenzie.
Like Greg, we released some fish here from the McKenzie also, 179,000 into the river. Pretty good flows. We had 4,500 CFS at the time, so that worked out pretty well. Our fish health has been very good. We have all of our fry are ponded, and they're doing pretty good. Just some minor internal fungus with them. Other than that, they're doing very well. Our water situation here changed since the last meeting. We just right after the last meeting, all of our water situation from Lieberg Dam changed, went back to normal. So we were able to dodge that bullet there and learned a little bit how we can operate off the canal at certain water levels for an extended period of time in the winter. I'm not sure about summer. That would be a whole other ballgame because Cogswell Creek was able to with a little bit of rain we got here and there, it maintained a good flow for us. It dropped down into the 9 CFS area, but then it would rain and we'd get back up to 15 or 16. So that worked out pretty well for us. Obviously, summertime it's 2 CFS in there or less sometimes. But let's see here. And I had a lot of outreach activities around here the last month. We had a career day with high school groups in the area. We participated in the career day, I should say. We've had about a half dozen U of O journalism students call us for interviews. I accommodated about three or four of them. Kind of more of a not really searching for things about what we at the fish hatchery, but more of a personal kind of thing. Why did you go and do this kind of work kind of thing? So anyway, I'm on somebody's list. I had to gotta get off that list. No, that's all right. I don't mind it, but I got so many calls. It was just way too many. And we had a couple of tours, actually, in the last couple of weeks. A little bit of outreach activity. But things are going well here, and that's about all I've got.
Good. So, John, you just want to go down the list in terms of what you know and update us on?
South AVM, that's Brett said. Things are moving along. The equipment repair problem, same as Minto.
Okay.
They keep patching things and then they break and they patch them. But things are functioning. Everything is going fine. He's got an occasional fish that swims in, and okay. They keep going back to see if anybody else wants to come. But there's nothing really going on.
Okay.
They got the standard Aeromonas, Pseudomonas, modal bacteria in their fish. That doesn't mean anything. Those are in every fish.
Okay.
So his fish health is pretty decent there at South Santa Yama. So life is good down there. Can we do Willamette?
Sure.
Hey, question on that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Winter steelhead into the new trap, Foster?
Yeah.
How's it going?
There were two in December?
Three last week.
Yeah, they had one.
Five.
See, last Thursday, I think they had one.
Is everything good to go on the ladder? Everything's operational, working?
Everything works. Everything is working as it was designed.
Okay.
So I don't know. So at the review, they presented a little bit on, you did, mm-hmm. on the ladder. And we had issues with the ladder for Spring Chinook. I'm not sure how it's going to play out in the future. Yeah.
But that was related to temperature stuff, wasn't it?
Right, temperature.
Just operations of the whole tail race.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what.
But in terms of the ladder itself, it is available and ready to collect fish, right?
Yeah. Okay. We had an outage for a dive last week, or the week before, for like 3 days, but other than that, it's been up and running.
Yeah, they had closed, and as soon as the dive was completed, it was back in operation. Mm-hmm. So that was in my last notes last week. So.
Yeah.
Lamet,
of course, is even quieter. We had a meeting yesterday. I don't even want to talk about it, but there was a meeting looking at potential operations between Lieberg and Willamette and a consolidated, reduced costs and streamline things. So we're looking at that. We we've been looking at long-range engineering changes at Willamette for the intake structure and piping to be able to raise some more fish up there and clean the whole thing up. We look at it and we put a price tag on it. It's just absolutely phenomenal, and so it goes back on the shelf. But it's potentially $5 to $8 million to be able to increase trout production at Willamette and fix the intake structure and provide that much water. And that's without ever addressing the adult holding issue that continues to live in the little show pond they've got in the trees. Looks like something to be nice in a city park in Portland.
Right. So that does not include a new broodstock hole.
That does not include that, no.
And that'd be another $5 million?
I hope not.
Okay.
The price tag that came up before, that's, like I said, that was just horrendous.
That was for like a new spawning area, covered buildings, tables, water supply, the whole nine yards. That's not just a pool.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you'd have to be over about $1.5 million to build a concrete holding pond there.
Yeah.
I looked at some designs 3 or 4 years ago, looking at stuff they used in eastern Washington that you could put in there pretty simple and hold that many fish. You wouldn't have the fancy decks and the covers and the splitting ponds, but be very functional. Right now, it's not really functional. Yeah. We'll get that fixed. That's all of it is money, which means that it's we wait for a big windfall. Other than that, everything's going okay at Willamette. That's no big issues. They're anticipating. We'll probably talk about this more, but anticipating the issues of working on the gates at Lookout that will cause temperature problems below Dexter, which means that we've already inserted pretty large increases in medicated feed costs because we're anticipating the fish are going to be sick forever at Dexter this year. So hopefully it won't cause some just huge elevated. We can actually control it with antibiotic, but it's just an issue.
When will those operations start? That's going to change the temperatures from what time?
So basically, the gate work, the windows from May through November, and it turns out the best time to do the gate work in terms of being able to control inflows is not the best time for fish from a temperature management perspective. It wasn't the worst time for fish, but it definitely wasn't the best time for fish. And so that's why they went with that particular window. In terms of specifics, that hasn't been determined as to when the contractor will actually need that certain level. But typically, I think we begin those operations June 1 for temperature management. So we'll have to wait and see.
Is it expected it's going to be pretty bad, real high temperatures?
Well, typically, we've been doing this operation since 2012. We've been able to decelerate incubation times a little bit. The concern would be that slug of warm water at the end of summer. And I think it might be worthy to go back and look at historical data to anticipate what we might be looking at in terms of what that peak temperature might be. And I haven't done that.
And that relates to the need to make decisions about what we do with unclipped fish at Dexter that time of the year. Last year we put them back in the river below Dexter and they did not succeed.
You can assume that unless something happens between now and April, that the water's going to be a lot warmer than it was last year.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more, we can get historical highs.
Do we have a idea of the number of unclipped fish that came to Dexter last year?
Sure.
Yeah, because we have a little portable lift tank. We could take Little Fall Creek if that was ever.
I think that's what's part of the discussion right now with Ziller and Steve Marks. Can we use that as a receiving location for unclipped fish? Because our directive with other HGMP in place is that they have to be returned to the river.
Yeah.
Well, we treat Little Fall Creek as part of the lower river. So it's kind of splitting hairs, but.
Didn't we decide that that's what we wanted to do? Put them in Little Fall Creek?
But we reached a decision at that point. It has to be made by people who are very concerned about the potential for a lawsuit.
Okay. Do we need to set some kind of date then? So those, we have an answer from those folks by a certain time?
They're working on it now, so okay. We can tell them we have a deadline for their answer, but that's my preferred.
Who makes the decision?
Probably Steve Marks.
Okay.
What do you think? Probably.
Okay. So I'll just remind him periodically.
Okay.
All right, anything going on at Fall Creek or Cougar?
I just plan on opening the facility the week of the 16th, March 16th.
Yeah, that's the Monday.
Did you guys use that upper new release site on Fall Creek?
Twice, right?
Yeah, just
hit the Fall Creek. I've never seen it. Never seen it.
It's the old steelhead release site. It's up there. It's not very far from the barrier. A mile from the barrier or something. But, yeah, it's nice. It's nice, you know. Temperatures seem to be a little better up there later in the season.
Well, we've had one solid year of data and one questionable year of data. The last two, the pre-spawn mortality is really high up there.
Yeah.
And that's going to cost us. So if there's an opportunity to maybe... You did a great job getting fish up to North Fork, Middle Fork of high survival, low pre-spawn mortality. Maybe it's time to think hard about something to do in Fall Creek, especially given we're probably going to have worse conditions this coming year than last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's hard to imagine it's going to be worse than last year. I think we have 24 reds total for all the fish you put up there.
It's unbelievable being so close to the huge metropolitan area of Springfield and Eugene that... Does fish succeed at all?
Yeah.
People literally sitting in the river. You know, you go up there July 4th and you really see what they're up against.
And Greg also pointed out that there's some predation issues, I guess, with the otters. He's seen quite a few.
Yeah, there's family otters up there.
You know, we've had poaching issues as well up there.
Oh, I remember that. From
bad, bad.
Yeah. What about up high? Is it behind gates?
They can get to it up high. The one cool thing about up high I like is that last mile from Gold Creek to the barrier is an impasse. It's a canyon you have to swim into to get into. So there's refugia in there, and they're spawning. I've swam the whole thing. There's spawning area in there, holding areas in there. It's not like lower down though, as far as the size and frequency of the holding pools, you know, below Gold Creek. The access from there, from Gold Creek down to the next bridge down, is pretty limited as well. That's a good, that's kind of a sweet area for holding. Once you get down below, I forget the number of that bridge, once you get down Puma area down, it's heavily recreated, accessible.
Hey, is Fall Creek stocked with rainbow trout by ODF&W?
Yes, it is.
The reservoir.
But I don't, how, do you know how high it goes up, Doug?
What the,
I think it goes up.
The stocking?
Yeah, actually,
I don't. I just know that when we had the screw trap there at Dolly Varden, we caught after the beginning of trout season, or then, you know, after the stocking, oodles. We caught oodles and oodles of them in screw trap.
Okay, and it looks like they excuse me, they flush out at Gold Creek.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
Any other updates?
How's the ladder at Minto? Is it?
It's operational. Okay. Yep.
You might want to know that Lieberg operated to that no water period of slightly less than 2 second feet of water for about the same number of pounds we had at McKenzie that we had, I think, 25 second feet of water for. So apparently we can keep fish alive on not very much water. But they hadn't fed them for that whole period,
yeah.
And they have responded just like I suspected. They put them back on feed, and they're blooming. So it's there. We're gaining up just about all the growth we lost during that month-long period, so, which is pretty typical. You put them on a fast, and they shut down, and then you put them back on, and they grow right back. It said we survived that whole thing pretty well.
Good.
It's a good thing it was in the wintertime.
Well, yeah, the summertime would have been an entirely different issue.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, we probably would have mobilized more trucks and started moving fish up front, not even thinking we could hold off.
All right. Next agenda item, Dave, you want to kick this one off? WFOP discussion regarding the ladder and shutting it down.
I'm sorry, are you talking? Did you talk to me, Chris?
Are you talking?
Yes.
Who are you talking? I'm having trouble hearing you.
That's bad because I'm right next to it.
Which item are we on? Number four.
WFOP discussion, I was wondering if you could kick that off in regards to ladder shutdowns and the WFOP.
Sure, I certainly will give it a shot and everybody can join in here. I guess at this point we have these new facilities, a couple of new facilities online, and I don't even know if the Corps has super clear understanding on are these ladders and traps shut down certain times of the year by ODFW to do maintenance? Are they open year-round? So that we can help, so the Corps can help coordinate some kind of maintenance activities they may need to do in the future, or does ODFW do maintenance in the future? So we just wanted to get a better sense of what is happening. I know in the olden days, the Foster, for example, had an annual shutdown every year for a certain amount of time, and so we're trying to get clarity on what's going on now and into the future.
Sure, Dave. So in the current WFOP, which is still technically draft, but it's on the web. It has shutdown periods for the ladder and the pools as to when maintenance can be done. However, there are other times we know when we'll need to shut the ladder down for whatever reason, whether we need to install an antenna at a different time of year other than the shutdown period. And that just needs to get coordinated through the region is all. So there are maintenance periods in the WFOP. In terms of maintenance, the major maintenance is done by the Corps. Minor maintenance is done by ODFW, but typically if the ladder is going to be shut down, I think it would be the Corps that would be doing the maintenance at both Minto and Foster.
Mm-hmm. I might simply have missed it.
Sure.
But was there a request to ODFW to review the WFOP? It just sort of
It got reviewed by ODFW. Bernadette mm-hmm. sent quite a few comments.
Okay.
I got good responses from Fish and Wildlife Service as well, and then internal folks at the same time.
Is there any substantive changes going into this next season?
In terms of addressing the comments, really comments dealt with more explicitly stating what our special operations for fish passage would be. So those got added to the WFOP. Another major comment was just remove all the extraneous background so that we can get to the meat in terms of how we're going to operate. We don't need the background. We just need to know how we're going to operate a facility or a project for fish. Mm-hmm. So that was addressed. All the background was pulled. There were some other minor comments, but the major ones had to do with downstream fish passage operations. And then also laying out kind of how the coordination process will work. And so there's language in the current version. However, we're still working on, I feel there could be a better way to coordinate these things. And so we're working on looking at how to do that, basically, so that everyone...
Yeah, and when there are specific RMNE activities that we know are planned for future years or in a specific time frame, we're also trying to figure out how we can best communicate our needs if we have to do something within a ladder, for example. Can it be shut down during a certain time period? When's the least harmful time in terms of us having the ability to close off a ladder or dewater it to do some planned RM&E activity? And they're always short-term activities, but trying to get that done so that we can continue to... to make sure that our RM&E efforts in the future are successful, but at the same time, we just need to make sure we're coordinating these things.
Is it updated every preseason going into the year?
It will be now. I actually have a version we can work with. So like I said, the draft's on the web. We're waiting on one of our senior level staff to send the actual cover letter. So it's official that, we've submitted the WFOP. And then from there, annually, it'll get reviewed. There'll be an annual meeting to kind of go through the year in terms of what we think might need to be changed. Mm-hmm. and then the changes will be incorporated that we deem appropriate. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of the base plan. We just need to make some adjustments. Mm-hmm. An example might be the turbine maintenance periods may need to be tweaked depending on someone's opinion or data that we have, or even the maintenance periods at the fish facilities might need to be tweaked. But at least now we have a maintenance period that we can work with. Mm-hmm. Any other questions about the WFOP or maintenance periods?
Oh, sure. So you can see there's your WFOP, there's your coordination form, and your change forms for document.
So if you don't like something in the plan, you could fill out the form. We could talk it here about it here, and then at the end of the year, consolidate what we think needs to be incorporated.
Okay.
And then the coordination form would be for those items that deviate from our plan, so that if we are going to deviate, we coordinate that with the region and other folks that are interested.
And that'd be preseason, so December, January, February, somewhere in that time frame.
Yep.
Go through this process each year.
Correct.
Okay, I'll read it.
And the major components, there's one major component dealing with just fish facility operations, one major component dealing with maintenance. The other major component, or large component, is when we take units down, because that has a pretty large impact, especially during certain times of year when we have to spill and elevate gas levels and stuff like that.
What about at the level of just things that come up at the different facilities, like we've got shutdowns because of power availability?
There's an emergency operations section that deals with that in terms of who to call and what needs to get reported and what doesn't need to get reported. And the plan's organized. There's a main section that kind of gives an overall view of how we plan to operate our facilities. But then there's four appendices. There's more than that, but there's an appendices for each sub-basin. So the North St. Anne has its own sub-basin that deals with Minto, Big Cliff, Detroit, and then on down with the South St. Anne dealing with Foster and Green Peter and so on. It's on there if you want to take a look.
I will. It just came as a surprise because I hadn't seen it until Bernard said, hey, look at this, and I hadn't.
We talked about it a while back, and I've been working on it. I sent certain sections out to folks to kind of help develop some of the protocols, specifically dealing with how we move fish and handling. And I worked on a lot of the hydropower stuff internally and then with other folks to determine sensitive time periods.
Is Leeward operations in the McKenzie?
It is. Section? Yeah.
Because I haven't reviewed that, and I need to look at the context of what we're talking about here.
Okay. No, that'd be good actually, because you're probably a little more familiar. So, in terms of the other ladder that we use. So. Any other WFOP questions? All right, moving on. We talked about this next item last month. We're calling them unsanctioned fish releases.
Unsanctioned.
That's what Cam came up with.
It's better than surplus.
Yeah.
Homeless is like that.
Or homeless.
Homeless fish.
Last month we came up with three potential alternatives. One were using the net pens in the lower Columbia, the other was the Clackamas alternative, which Lance didn't think would be very viable due to kind of what we've done in the past. My kind of take now is really our two options are Coast Fork or euthanize.
There's still an option for the lower Columbia.
Is there?
If we can do it late, they'll have space in net pens beginning about in April.
The only problem I have, it's not my problem, it's our problem, is that our authority is to mitigate for Willamette Valley projects. And I guess you can kind of make the stretch that it's not in-kind mitigation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure if we'd have to do some sort of modification or not in terms of what it says in the agreement.
Well, euthanizing the fish provides no mitigation.
I know. I just don't know if we go that route. I don't know what we need to do, and I guess I should probably find out in terms of doing it so that it's legit.
Well, the cost for it then is likely, if policy folks come down that hard, then the Coast Fork is the only viable option. If there's some pushback from the lower Willamette managers for the Clackamas release also, some people are all for it. I think there are people that have boats, and some people are not because of the issue of fish straying back to the Clackamas hatchery. I thought that, I'm not thinking about the policy level stuff, I thought
if
you had to dump them somewhere,
yeah,
the lower Columbia would afford folks the opportunity to catch them. And then the Coast Fork is probably where we're going to fall, just because it sounds like there's going to be issues with the lower Columbia. Coast Fork does provide mitigation for Willamette fisheries, and we have our doubts that the early releases in the Coast Fork were successful. It was a very strange time to release some fish.
And I could make the argument for the lower Columbia. The problem might be when we go to modify whatever agreement we have, or we'd have to go through our contract office, and that doesn't always move very fast.
No, really?
That's
right.
So,
it doesn't either. So,
I mean, it's out there, but that's why I went back to the Coast Fork and then the other option.
Well, I don't want to say I'm kicking it down the road, but we do have a decision to be made in the courts, and that will drive whether we have to make a final decision, and it's coming up fast, so...
Well, we're going to have unsanctioned or excess fish either way. So we're going to have to do something with some of them.
Unless the judge rules...
If the judge rules we're allowed to release at 605K, then they can go into the Mackenzie.
If the judge rules that we have to stick at
360, then we'll release the other half. We've already released half of the 360.
Right.
We'll release the other half into the Mackenzie to make a total of 360. 59 sure to be less than 360, and then I guess then we'll make the decision on where the rest go.
So there's the court issue. If we did decide on Coast Fork, would NIMS be comfortable with that in terms of releasing our unsanctioned fish in the Coast Fork? I know you presented some data on those fish at the last HMT, and then again at, did you present that at?
Sure.
I know. So, I guess we'd want NIMS concurrence with that, mm-hmm, if we were going to move forward on that.
Yeah, it's really going to just depend on the outcome of the lawsuit, because we're not supportive of the lower release level, the 360. We think that jeopardizes our conservation objectives in the Mackenzie, but the judge will have to rule on that. Is there any other opportunities to release these fish in the main stem Willamette between Corvallis and Eugene?
Sure. I mean, options.
Well, that came up a month, I think, when we were looking at the original 230 that we took out in January. There were some sites that were mentioned. And they didn't seem like good sites at that time. But that's what you say, euthanized fish are no sites. So what's the better option we've got on that?
Yeah. I mean, if we can keep them in the Willamette Basin, that's what they're intended for. That's what they were produced for.
Correct.
Especially with the lower Columbia being maxed out and all of the production changes anyways. I mean, so... And the investment on these fish, I mean, to kill them, that's not a good option right before release. And that's the last option, they go in the Coast Fork or main stem Willamette.
Not a good option, but I also thought about we wouldn't want to put them somewhere where they're just going to stray back somewhere where we don't want them to. And that's why I was thinking, I mean, Coast Fork seemed to me kind of our only option, but it sounds like there are other potential options between Corvallis and Eugene. So I guess we'll put that on the next agenda for next month. Or just at least touch bases to say what, you know, maybe there's been a ruling and there's been a decision by that point.
Are the agencies comfortable with the Coast Fork or some site around Eugene or Corvallis? Is there any objections from the agencies on that?
I think from our perspective, if it's okay from NMFS's standpoint, from a conservation perspective, we'd be okay with that.
Kelly, are you still on?
I am on.
Have you guys talked about that?
I have heard conversations for main stem releases. There's pros and cons.
Yeah, it seemed to be Steve was talking about that a month ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the final outcome was.
I don't know if there was a final outcome. That's something I'd want to talk more if that's something that's seriously on the table. It was definitely talked about earlier.
Okay.
So, Cam, what's the schedule for the lawsuit?
On March 2nd, we have a hearing, and I've been invited. Just so thrilled. And if required, I can give testimony then. It may not be required. The judge may simply have reviewed the documents from us and the plaintiffs. They were provided last week, 2 weeks ago. And he may make a decision right there based on his review of the declarations and expert testimony, or he may require that it go to trial. If it goes to trial, then it will be delayed for a long time. Don't know how long. But in my opinion, we have him in the crushing grip of reason. So he'll make a decision on March 2nd. And we'll move forward.
Okay. So if it goes to trial, what happens with the 360 number? That's still a
360 is
binding.
We'll release up to 360, and then the remaining 250,000 fish on hand will go somewhere else. That sounds like it's likely to be the Coast Fork, although there might be more discussion on that.
Should we try to come to some decision on that today, because we won't have the next HMT until after that March 2nd date?
I think we've got to narrow down as close as it needs to
be. Are we saying Coast Fork? Is this decided?
Well, I think it'll be kind of fish manager will kind of make that call in terms of what is best in terms of we have a ruling or we don't.
Right.
And we got to figure out where
so it is. It might be useful for Steve to know what your perspective is for the lower Columbia release before March 2nd, in case that's still on his mind.
Okay.
Do you have a preference, Lance? Would you lean towards more of the lower main stem versus Coast Fork? Or?
I don't know. In my mind, you know, Coast Fork or Eugene to Corvallis is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I think we probably get the same outcome.
Yeah, same outcome.
Okay.
I would definitely prefer to see them in Basin versus going down to the lower Columbia.
Yeah.
And I think the Clackamas Cove thing is a showstopper from our standpoint. Just on where we're at. I mean, we made those revisions a decade more ago and for ESA reasons, and I wouldn't want to go back to that.
So just from the monitoring perspective, all groups are coded wire tags. They all have representative coded wire tags. We will track their recovery in Basin, McKenzie, and elsewhere if they stray elsewhere. Except I'm not promising that we'll get a reasonable number of carcasses in the Coast Fork because have not succeeded with a legitimate spawning ground surveys on the Coast Fork yet. I had one effort at it, but one year's effort at it. But
I'd like to hear from ODFW when you kind of scope out the main stem releases a little bit more, because the Coast Fork, I mean, we've saturated that release pretty well, you know.
If they survive.
Yeah, and we don't know how successful the returns are going back to there. So if there's a better release site, that would be
preferable. Lance, in some of my conversations with Steve, one of the spots mentioned was Marshall Island, which is, five or so miles below the mouth of the Mackenzie.
Okay. I mean, in any case, it's not a good situation. They've been reared their entire life at Mackenzie, and then we're dumping them somewhere without acclimation, without all the usual things that we strive for.
Yep.
Would there be any benefit to releasing them in the reservoir in Post Fork and maybe the acclimate? I don't know what downstream passage is like, but
I have no idea.
There were releases already in the Coast Fork, right?
It didn't work in the past.
No.
Yeah.
But they're ongoing. Right. So we had several hundred thousand already in the Coast Fork.
200,000, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. John, recollection of that?
225.
230
minus
11,083
fish.
Yeah, they were January 1st in the Coast
Fork. So that went there.
Any other thoughts regarding item 5 before we move on?
So, if we have actions out of that, ODFW is going to look into
it. Yeah.
Scoping out options for main stem releases between Corvallis and Eugene. Yeah. I said it.
Now, were you going to let Steve Marks know about that, or should I let him know about that? Okay.
Yeah, we need a deadline on it, too.
Oh, really?
If we just put it in here as an action item, we'll wait until
I know.
In March.
That's what I'm worried about.
Before the end of February.
Yeah.
Well, why? I mean, we can hang on to them through March if they're on station.
Well, see, but what I'm saying is our next HMT meeting will be back clear spring break time of March. And then it's a real. If you want me to load up a bunch of fish and haul them at the last minute,
logistics are absolutely
unpopular. Right now we're trying to crank. We're minus a truck driver and a truck.
Okay.
There's all sorts of fish going all over the state. I daily get calls from people saying we can't do this.
So it seems like we know this is coming. So by March 2nd, we should have a tentative plan in place. Yeah. And the worst case scenario would be we have to move those fish out whenever and plan for it. Whatever the release site is. I mean, we have to know what the release site is by that time, and everybody needs to be aware of what's going to happen.
Yeah, see, that fish number is roughly equivalent. It'll actually be a higher volume than what we moved on the 30th of December, and that took, must have been 8 trucks, 2 trips each, because it was a short haul, so it's a pretty big evolution to get those fish moved out.
Yeah.
It's 245,000 fish, right?
Yeah.
At release size.
Yeah, so it's probably 15 to 20 trucks.
Yeah. Deadline, March 2nd for a decision on what our options are.
All right. We good? So who will, I guess you'll report back to here?
I'll talk to Steve.
Okay. Item 6 we kind of touched on. I don't know if we need to touch on it any further. The monthly reporting, the spreadsheet that you guys worked on. We're just moving out on it. That's all I have, unless you guys had anything additional. Andy, did you want to talk about that at all?
Nope. I can send it out to the group again for review. I sent it out to a couple folks 2 weeks ago, and I haven't heard anything back.
So the only outstanding thing was I need to get Hoganson on board for providing the Lieber counts, and I'm assuming that there's no issue with the Cougar and Fall Creek counts being provided regularly.
I think so, yeah.
So we settled on a monthly update. Stephanie wanted it daily.
Sorry.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Going to happen.
But
was she reading?
Was she on the phone?
Let me give you her cell phone number.
Yeah, we're going to send it out.
I put secret words like broccoli in there to see if she's reading them even.
The hatchery traps they're compiling this information on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I send the hot topics around you guys. The guys that have a decent bracket like Minto and Foster, you get that every week. So that's mm-hmm. Basically, once we get that format, I'm going to see that every Friday.
So we need to get an unflipped breakdown. So what happens right now is they off and on report a click rate that we can then sort of theoretically apply to the total count, but it always ends up off by quite a bit month to month. So Brett, I think, already agreed that he would add a column.
Yeah.
And if we can get
that. It's not a big deal. That's probably a bigger deal for Cougar, you know, or somebody that's not providing those reports on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
But you guys,
yeah, we do.
It's pretty
do
simple.
Yeah,
I mean, you have the numbers already, you just don't send them anybody.
Greg usually tries to send them out.
Greg was.
Yeah. Well, my only problem is figuring out how to get Liebert up to real time.
Yeah. It's always behind how many?
Months.
So.
But I've got a solution, and we'll talk about it when we get to my Liebert straw man.
All right. The next item, Cam suggested we talk about the review we just had last week.
Yeah.
We could probably talk about that for quite a long time. So I wasn't quite sure how to approach it. I don't know if you wanted to.
Well, I had Dave's still on the phone, so he can help. I had a hallway conversation with, and this is selfish, but I do this every year. A hallway conversation with Dave and Mary Louise, and I wanted to make sure that the choice of metrics that I report on every year and focus on, so hatchery fish abundance, wild fish abundance, spawners, distribution, PIOS issues, that is what folks want. Is that, because there's a lot more material we collect, but that doesn't seem to rise to the top as those particular metrics. Did I cover what needs to be reported, or should I be adding more material on all the metrics?
Well, let me ask you this, Cam. Is there some particular metric that, because it does sound like you actually collect quite a bit of information. Is there something in particular that you think may be more important than other metrics that you're not reporting? I'd certainly like to, you know, if you have some thoughts, I'd like to hear that. We see what you provide us, and it looks, it's very helpful. It gives us a sense of what's happening out there in each of the sub-basins on the spawning grounds. I'm trying to think, is there something else that would shed more light and perhaps illuminate any issues better than others?
So I pick the ones I talk about because that, in my opinion, are the high points that need to be addressed each year. But Mary Lou had some kind of comments that she would, I think, support more. But I don't know what more is. The other VSP monitoring metrics are things like PNI and PNOB.
Right.
And they're important to be reported on in case somebody needs them. But abundance, distribution, and diversity.
I think if there are metrics that are laid out in the HEMPs, we definitely need to report on those. That's my thought. And some of those you just mentioned, I think, are.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just from a, are we doing what we said we're going to do in the HEMP perspective?
Okay.
Yeah, and we've had this conversation, Cameron and I certainly have, that, there actually is a lot of data that's collected per the HEMP metric standards, et cetera, but it's not all necessarily done by CAM. There are others in ODF&W who collect these types of data, and so they may end up rolling up into different reports, and to try to get your arms around, you know, all of that to get a better understanding of how is this particular hatchery program performing in this basin. You need to look at a couple of different reports. So Cameron and I have talked about, is there any way to pull some of that stuff in? And I think you've been making an effort to do that. I don't know if there's some some silver bullet out there that'll just all of a sudden, you know, the light bulb goes on and go, oh my gosh, look at all this wonderful stuff, and I can see everything that's going on right now. But it's hard, particularly, you know, in the absence of not knowing what particular reports to look at, you know, and that type of thing.
An example that I can think of would be PNOB, or how much you integrate at a hatchery. Like, we have the numbers in the annual operations reports. I don't know if the metric is specifically reported on, but like they said, I think it's kind of, some metrics might be in one report, some might be in another. However, you capture probably most of them. I'm not sure. I haven't actually quantified, you know, the metrics we need.
It's just, I mean, PNOB is zero.
And, you know, and the other challenge we have is that we have these PNI goals and whatnot, but there are so few natural origin fish that are coming into these systems that, you know, I think everybody's reluctant to take natural origin fish out and shove them into the broodstock, for example. So, you know, we've got a lot of challenges. You know, I think some of the things that I've been interested in for a long time is trying to get a better sense of what kind of contribution these individual programs are making to the fisheries in general. Because, I mean, you know, it's one of the whole thoughts here is that these fish are mitigation fish. And you know, I know that there's harvest going on in various places throughout the system on these adult fish, and I know they make a good contribution, but you know, we don't get it. It's hard to get a sense of how we're performing in that arena, for example. And then I always kind of come back to, you know, are we producing enough fish? Are we producing too many fish? You know, what's the right number of fish? And then, of course, the magic, the other one that I've always scratched my head about a little bit is, well, you know, we kind of need to have a good understanding of what the smolt to adult return rate is. And I know Cameron's been working on that as well. We got fairly good numbers from McKinsey, but the other ones seem to be somewhat eluding us, although I'm sure they're probably all in the same ballpark. But
No, not really, not at all. David Hewlett presented those this past science review.
So a couple months ago we talked about this and kind of tried to lay out what metrics would be useful, but I don't think we followed up adequately in terms of talking about it at future HMT meetings. It kind of dropped off. I know that we...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was an actual list of metrics. I know Dave had some sort of document that kind of got at kind of what we thought our information needs were.
Oh, this was the goals discussion.
Yeah.
The goals discussion, right.
And honestly, I mean, I wasn't certainly inventing the science out there. I was kind of going back looking through some of the HSRG science out there on hatcheries and seeing what they feel, that group feels, is important in terms of reporting hatchery, you know, information rolling into a hatchery to try to get a sense of program performance and how it's affecting listed species, that type of thing.
Okay. So there's the Hatchery Comprehensive RM&E plan that has a lot of that stuff in there that we've used or not used over the years. That's a good place to start.
Yep. There's a three-year plan that was put together. It was kind of a shorter version of that overall plan that kind of laid out the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. And
right. In fact, we were just talking about that yesterday. We should be getting close to the time period when we kind of roll up a number of years of information and summarize and present that, and not sure how to present it, where to present it, what do we, you know, when's the right time? And Cameron, you can help out on that. I think, help me out on this, Cam. I think the last full reporting year of data we have seen, the Corps has seen, is 2012. Isn't that correct? I don't think we've still seen the 2013 report yet.
Correct. So I got the 2013.
So, I mean, here we are in 2015. It's really, really challenging to try to understand how we're doing when, you know, we're pretty far behind in reporting this information.
Correct. So when you and I talked about it last, I think we settled on the August deadline for the 2013 and 14 report together. And then we would have we'd convene a three-year retrospective review sometime after August.
Yeah, I think you're, as I always said, I can't remember, but I'll accept that. It sounds good.
So August is the deadline for the I believe it's the 90% draft.
Right. Yes, it is.
Okay. So we'll have 3 years of data, 2012, 13, and 14, by August of this year, and then we'd have our three-year review.
In the fall. That sounds good.
Well, it doesn't have to be that late. I mean, we can do it very soon after.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
because
saying.
Because if we do it soon after, we get the 90%, and if there are shortcomings or things become
make adjustments,
clear,
right.
Then we'll have 3 months before the October deadline.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I was thinking somewhat selfishly. My wife, being a school teacher, the only time we ever take vacations is in the summer, and that's when you dump these reports on us.
It's your fault, Ken.
Although I'm grateful, thank you.
Okay.
So over the years, what I've heard, and you know, many of you guys weren't involved with this, that the reports coming from ODFW back to the core sometimes didn't have what you guys were looking for. I think Cam started off with, you know, tell us if there's something that needs to be changed there, so the core needs to make sure that.
I think we've taken that step, and
yeah.
Holding the 2012 report, the back and forth we've had so far on that is seems to match the outline that was laid out in the Army plan.
Okay.
And I think we're just waiting on an approval, Dave, from you, that I addressed yours and Rich's final comments adequately.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I think we've made great strides in reporting, and Cameron, you've done a really good job of taking getting all those different independent sub-basin data collection sets and putting them into something that's all similar now and much more easily understandable than it used to be.
So, anything else regarding specific metrics? Do we want to talk about the review at all, or is that it?
I just thought it would be a good time for anybody to tell us what they heard that was really, really striking and what gaps there might have been. From our program's perspective, I think we covered our program, so that's Tom's probably. Buried you guys in, I think, some pretty good presentations and some solid data from everything spanning harvest, hatcheries, reservoir research. Any complaints?
I got a question on the what happened last year for the Dexter early outplanting. How'd that go?
It went great in the North Fork, Middle Fork.
So the fish were collected, they survived at what rate?
I haven't looked at it enough to say it was the early fish that survived at a high rate. All fish survived at a high rate in the North Fork, Middle Fork. The very low pre-spawning mortality in the North Fork, Middle Fork. Very high pre-spawning mortality above Hills Creek, 92% across the board. I'm certain it has a lot to do with density of loading and the time it takes to get those fish up there. So
the North Fork, Middle Fork had outplanting throughout the season, and they did pretty good.
Absolutely. It was the core taking the lead on getting a truck available at Dexter for loading every week throughout the season.
Yeah, the two loads a week.
Yeah, done.
And what was your hauling number?
2 gallons 60? To the pound.
60 fish?
60 fish for 1,500 gallon tank.
Okay.
What's the turnaround time on that trip? You know, to get up there?
So spawning, escapement, spawners was looking pretty good in the North Fork, Middle Fork?
So, yeah.
So am I hearing this right? It was a drastic change?
It was an increase in pre-spawn or in survival and increase in red counts above in the North Fork, Middle Fork. I think it worked well with the outplanting operation in place. Diving in and looking to see whether there were influences of early versus late outplanting, you can't do that when none of your fish die. I mean, if you had high pre-spawning survival, then you can't tell whether early outplanting was effective. They all survived. I would like to do exactly what these guys did everywhere. That seemed to work really well in a year that wasn't that great a water year.
Yeah, we baby them for sure. I mean, they deserve it. We were lucky. We have staff to do that. Chad and I, once the season, the run starts, that's what we do as adult stuff, period. So we're done.
Fall Creek, of course, is a different story. Something else is going on there.
What do you mean, different story?
Much higher pre-spawning mortality. Very small, low number of reds. Great survey conditions, so it wasn't an artifact like it was in, possibly in 2013. In fact, the more I compare 2013 and 14, I think that the rainstorm we had at the end of the season was not the explanation for our, for low red counts. It was definitely the explanation for low carcass recovery, small sample sizes on carcasses. They simply get flushed out and we never see them again. But I think we got a reasonable red count in both 2013 and 14, and spawner success was very low in Fall Creek.
What's the attitude towards the putting fish in the reservoir, or percentage, at Fall Creek? Didn't you have I study that a little?
Mm-hmm. Not at Fall Creek.
I remember dropping fish.
Dropped a few fish. Yeah. I think they just...
They didn't tag them, though.
Yeah, they did.
Fall Creek fish?
Should have, yeah.
Small sure. Number of fish.
Small number,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can find that.
The year before last?
Yeah.
Had well, no, the year before that, yeah, but then... Okay.
Yeah, not this year. Yeah.
Huh. I don't even remember seeing that in the report. But that the jury's still out on that. The fish that were released in the reservoir in the South San Yam, they had some real problems. And I didn't fit my preconceptions. I hate that. Fish released in the reservoir above Foster fell back over Foster at a rate of about 20%, so one in five fish fell back. But fish released at about the same time up at Gordon Road or at Riverbend, none of them were detected falling back, zero. So I had assumed that, my preconception was that because a significant proportion of the unclipped fish we put up above Foster were actually hatchery origin unclipped fish, that those fish simply recognized that they were in the wrong place and fell back. But if that's the case, then river outplants should have fallen back at the same rate or similar rate as reservoir outplants, and that's not the case. So a reservoir release, if that just is what we'd have to live with, a 20% loss because we put them in the reservoir, that's probably not a great option.
It's confusing to them.
Would it be? I mean, they're right in at Caucus, right there in the flow of the north or the South San Yam. I can't believe they can't tell that's upstream. I have a hard time believing that. But
maybe it's just confusing to the 20% of the dumb ones.
Natural selection.
Maybe there's power lines that's causing a flux in the electromagnetic array.
Sure. Okay.
Are the fallback concerns at Fall Creek the same as those at Foster?
Ooh, good question.
Foster, different place, different type of...
Right, because Foster, you got the weir.
Probably squandering would be more what you would call it in Fall Creek.
Because it'd be via the
not
fish
being
horse.
Able to get out to fall back. You know? Right. So go up Windberry, I don't know. Yeah. Because of the head issue and the lack of hydro.
Right.
Lack of spill. And then when we go to full horn water, they're not right. Going through the horns.
Yeah.
So there's no way to get out.
Right.
Really good success in the North San Yam, in my opinion. Got a good solid distribution of active spawning in the Brighton Bush, first time since I started. And kept a bunch of fish out of Horn Creek, so we planted just about 50 pairs in Horn Creek, Greg did, and red distribution looked fine, I mean no overlapping. What we haven't looked at it yet is whether excluding fish from Horn Creek meant the fish that were excluded distributed more broadly in the upper north San Diego. We just don't No, we can do that with our GPS red tracking, but we haven't done it yet. But bottom line is that very low pre-spawning mortality, good numbers of reds, both arms of the North San Diego.
So the Brighton Bush was successful with the outplant site. Was
up there, river. Greg found that one up at the...
It was a good release site.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I think we had like a 1% pre-spawning mortality and a really nice match in red count compared to the numbers of females that we put up there. So it's not always the case.
Were they outplanted throughout the whole season or no, at least later?
No, it was limited because of the thrash trying to get organized with a suitable outplant site. So there was a small number of fish that were outplanted during commissioning of the USGS gauging station, and then no way we could put them in at the Villa Maria site. We knew that. So Greg kind of stepped up fast and furious and found access to the Hot Springs Resort site. And then I think we got two, perhaps three outplant days relatively late in the season up there, just because of access. But he's got I think it's even better than a handshake agreement for a five years of outplanting up there, and you know, just great, kind of fits our preconceptions of want a generation of outplanting, and then by then there'll be some issues resolved with downstream passage and natural production fish can be placed up there.
What's the snapshot on what happened at Foster with unmarked, below and above? And
snapshot is unmarked fish piled up below Foster. A very small number, relatively speaking, compared to previous years, were captured in the trap and outplanted. About 400 fish were outplanted above Foster. We'd have expected closer to 900 to 1,000. So because of the issues with ladder entry, we hypothesize that it's just they're rejecting the ladder at this point and then spawning down below. So we've got a solid set of DNA samples from the carcasses that were collected below Foster, and Melissa Evans, the genetic, and a 100% sample of fish that were outplanted. So Melissa Evans will be able to do the same thing she did for the first 2 years. So she will pedigree upstream outplants and probably demonstrate that 70% of the ones that were passed upstream were born up there. And then she'll be able to take the DNA samples from the carcasses for those that have a high quality, enough DNA, good quality DNA, and then she'll figure out what proportion of them were actually born above Foster. The difficulty will be that in the past, for the first 2 years, that was a small adjustment because there were relatively small numbers of wild fish below. Now it's going to be a really big one, because there is about probably something on the order of a third or two-thirds of the fish below Foster or natural origin.
So you clearly saw a bump up this last season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We had something like, I treated as a capture efficiency of unclipped fish at Foster for the recent history. Something like 70% of the unclipped fish enter the trap, the old trap at Foster, and dropped down to about 40%, I think, in 2014.
Huge drop. What was different about that whole situation?
The ladder is cold water. The
water temperature.
Is the water temperature going through the ladder?
Yeah. So it could be water temperature or water source or both of them.
What about Fred's theory, too?
Those are all Fred's theories. In fact, I'm sorry, I should say this. It's Jeremy Romer and Fred working together coming up with...
That blew my mind, talking about different arms of whether it's middle or south San Diego water.
So
that blew my mind.
So Fred and Jeremy came up with a hypothesis that the Green Peter Reservoir is releasing cold water that should stay low with minimal mixing. Mm-hmm. And then the way that the intake for the ladder was designed, I think the history was that they did some temperature checks at the time and thought that there wasn't going to be a significant temperature difference. And there was, in fact. And if it's cold water from the Green Peter arm staying low entering the ladder, then it's not South San Diego water where the fish were outplanted and where the only spawning is. So it could be attraction because a lack of attraction because of a lack of olfaction factor cues. Mm-hmm. Could simply be temperature. And then the other issue was that, and I don't think this is the case because of Brett's work, was that there's spill that came out for the roll gate there that's by the ladder. And Brett originally thought, okay, the fish are piling up there because that's warmer surface water, and then so they're not finding the ladder entrance. But then he talked, or was part of the foster monitoring, when they shut spill out of gate four off, instead of the fish then finding the ladder entrance, backing down and finding the ladder entrance, they simply backed down and stayed down low. And when they turned the spill back on, then they came back up to the spill. So
under the rebuild trap, the water intake, I remember seeing those designs, is down deep. And that, how did they used to run water down the ladder? Was it?
I don't remember. I don't know the details on that. Okay. The new design is actually different from what you might have seen. Originally, there was this manifold thing that was down low with something like a standpipe that could have taken water from different levels, and that was in the original plans. Then that was changed, so now it's just a port on the face of the dam that takes water down deep. So there'd be some pretty serious engineering, including divers, to fix that.
I think the intake is actually in the side of the main intake for the penstock.
Yeah, it is. It's on the side. Number one.
It was originally a manifold that came.
Does that water mix or is it stratified in that area?
It's stratified, so it's warm on top and cold.
Okay, I was just thinking if we could potentially get more water to that ladder somehow by maybe spilling warmer water at Green Peter. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know either.
You think it's, is the temperature or the scent?
Yeah, we don't know.
It would be a fairly simple process to introduce surface water into that ladder flow. It's kind of like what we're doing in McKenzie, mixing Cogswell into.
Yeah, but how do you get the surface water to the ladder? I asked Griff that, and he said it's a plumbing issue, a big one.
If you try to go back in through the same hole, but you just put it on like a piece of conduit on the wall and run it into the ladder.
Yeah,
just put the water in.
But that's what he was saying. It's a plumbing issue. You'd have to add plumbing to the dam, and it's not insignificant.
You got head there, though.
Yes, no question about it.
You can do it.
It'd be interesting to match Green Peter releases to the subsequent downstream temperature changes at Foster, because that is the re-rig Foster.
So what we're doing, and it's academic, but I think it could be instructive, is that the OHRC has some visiting professors from Japan coming this summer who have experience with olfactory cues and homing and salmon. Mm-hmm. And they think that it's possible that they can look at a mass spectrophotometry of Green Peter water and North CIM water and tell whether there's an actual difference in the chemical makeup of the two water supplies. If there is a very significant difference, then that suggests that olfaction might be a big issue, as with Andy Dittman.
Well, we know salmon are able to discern that difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, makes sense. They'd say, this is Green Peter arm.
It's an easy, it's an academic but easy experiment. Yeah. Green Peter water, South Santiam water, ladder water. What does the ladder look like?
Yeah.
And that's this summer.
Yeah.
So what's the Corps been talking internally about this issue? Are there fixes that can be had or what?
I think at this point all I've heard is kind of trying to get a better handle on what the problem is. Mm-hmm. In terms of fixes, we briefly touched on it at the review,
right?
And that's as far as it's gotten.
Okay.
So I think there will be further discussions on what to do.
That was cool, actually. Late in the game, there were people still actively asking questions and discussing things. So that was nice. It doesn't always work out that way. So
hopefully, 14 was just an anomaly.
Could be.
I doubt it.
That's maybe why Griff gave me the task of putting together the before after the treatment, because I had a sample size of one to talk about. Thanks, Griff.
The snowpack's a little terrifying right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do pack tests for fire crew. Sorry.
20% of average, last time I checked.
Yeah, I was supposed to take
my skis are rusty.
I was supposed to take my Boy Scouts up to Hoodoo for a ski trip this weekend. Yeah, take a look at the webcam there. It's like,
well, you can get into the High Lakes early this year.
Yeah.
Fishing will be good.
Any other review highlights that people want to talk about or ask about?
Who's there? You guys? You were there.
I was there.
You were there.
Yeah,
That was pretty good.
I always like those pedigree studies. Mm-hmm. One done on the South San EM. And I was intrigued that she looked at, she sampled below and above project, but it sounded like...
We sampled below.
Sorry, you. You. Go ahead. And it sounded like, Nick, was it Nick Sard? Is that his name?
Uh-huh.
Only sampled above? Or did he do both?
Yeah, above.
Okay.
So I sent Griff the summary for the last 3 years for all of the below dam, below Foster, or, I'm sorry, below Cougar DNA samples we got from the South Fork.
It was 3 years worth?
Yeah, I think we got 3 years worth of sampling. We sample every unclipped fish in any survey everywhere for DNA.
So can I interrupt really quickly? Cam, do you want me to grab Jeff for this conversation?
Are we there yet?
We can go there if we need to.
Oh, sorry. I thought
Well, it was part of the review. Yeah, so
we were just downloading on the review and what we heard and what was interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but whatever works for Jeff, too, we can jump to that item.
No, okay. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
I like the early life stage impression stuff.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
That blew my mind.
And so then, Luke Whitman's and...
my mind is blown.
So that's SpaghettiGram, the horrendogram that has been floating around now for about 4 years. Luke Whitman spent hours working on how to describe that, because when I was talking to him, he says, it took me 2 years to figure out what they were talking about. Nobody had adequately explained how all of those lines connected. And Luke put together a really nice description on how, what it actually meant, what the line meant when it went from a stayer and a mover down to a fry migrant to a yearling migrant. So I think for the first time people really understand that. And it's funny because it came up a couple of different times in others' talks.
Mm-hmm.
People were slapping that up there. David Noakes slapped that picture up there. And I just knew, because Luke and I have been talking about it. People look at it and say, oh, it's very complicated. And that's it. That's all they get. Well, Luke explained it. So it was neat. Good job.
Well, it's funny because you kind of backwardsly learn that if you've spent 10 years on a screw trap at the same place in the lower part of the system and you see these different fish at the same time of the year or different times of the year, and they start to have these patterns of looks that, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
Cool. You should have been there.
I was doing a major rehab study. So our dam's not folding.
All right.
That's good.
Or when they fold out.
Yeah. Don't drive across the bottom.
So the next item is the Lieberg trapping operations you were going to put together.
I got a spreadsheet. Okay. So finished this last night when I sent it to you. All of the tabs down there, except for this first one and the last one, have been sent to the plaintiffs. So as far as I'm concerned, this is distributable data. So what we did then, we went back for the years of my tenure, where I think I have a reasonable understanding of what was going on in Lieberg, and parsed out the clipped and unclipped counts through Lieberg. And these are fish that were attempting to get upstream over time. And then calculated the percent of the total count. Much better, yeah. So these are people online. Dave, can you see this?
Yes, I can.
Okay,
yeah,
so
we did.
Counts of fish by every 2 weeks going up through Lieberg for clipped and unclipped fish. 2008 through 2014. Then this is the total of all fish up through Lieberg. So I'm looking to see what is the percent of clipped and unclipped fish going up over time, because that's instructive. In a cool year, a good year, an interesting year, you'd see something like this figure right here. And that's, I believe, 2010. Okay, the percent of total up migrants in 2010 was very heavily skewed towards clipped fish late in the season. And that's great. If that happened that way every year, that'd be awesome. But in 2013, this is what we saw, where basically a very small proportion of the fish migrated late in the season. And then in 2014, we saw something kind of in the middle like that. So you know what? To make this work, we have to rely on luck. Because I don't know what causes this amount of variability in that particular pattern.
So, Cam, you're talking about opportunities to pull out hatchery, Chinook, and Liebert Dam.
Right. So, okay. So when Kirk started doing this, I think he was working closely with you back for the McKenzie mm-hmm. plan, McKenzie work group. This is what he was looking at, 2010. And that looks like it could really work. If we put the trap in operation middle to late August, then we could remove a very large proportion of the hatchery fish to try to get upstream. But it's true that sometimes you don't have a large proportion of hatchery fish going upstream late in the season. So what's in common for these is that there is a saddle in every case right around August, sometime in August. And so in the HGMP and in the arguments to the plaintiffs, we said that we would start operating as early as July 1st in Liebert Dam, removing hatchery fish. So the trouble with that is in some years, there is a big number of unclipped fish migrating then. In other years, it's not the case. Some years, it's lower than that. It's on the downside, like here. Okay? So the straw man. We are tracking Liebert counts in real time over that period. So we will know what counts of fish are going up weekly, perhaps even faster than that. Okay? Every few days we'll know how many fish are moving. If we're on a steep downward trend for unclipped fish going upstream, then we can operate the trap, but watch it. If we get these secondary peaks like what happened in 2013, we've got to stop. So we pull the trap and we just let the fish go. And we wait for another steep downward count over a course of a week or so. And this all happens very rapidly. These are just 2 week intervals here. And put that trap back in operation when we're sure we're down in this saddle here, this little saddle that seems to appear sometime in August in each year. And then operate the trap in that way. Whenever we see an adaptive, whenever we see spikes of unclipped fish going upstream, then we've got to back off and let them go. Okay? So what I think will actually work out is what will probably happen is that we will be ready to go early in July, but we probably won't really start trapping until the numbers tell us we can in the first, second, or third week in August. Okay, we'll carry that out through the season. We're going to do it by giving Mike Hoganson two minions, two people. That's what he thinks it takes. So there'll be probably temps, EBAs. Their responsibilities are going to be for in real time reading the video. Okay, so they're going to work the trap morning and evening, but in the interim, in the middle part of the day, they're going to be reading video and reporting on what the you know kind of preliminary counts of fish are, and it'll be 5 days a week, so weekends will be free. Could conceivably push it on. I've succeeded in the past, but it's very hard on people to make them work 7 days a week. You could do it, but I think it's probably adequate to do it 5 days a week. The warts here. These are warts. These are problems. Going back up to the counts themselves, I talked to Kirk Schroeder yesterday. I've got a call into Lisa McLaughlin with eWeb. There has been no study to look at the effect on gate flow on ladder choice. That hasn't happened. I don't know why that hasn't happened. It seems like somebody should have written down for decades which gate was going and whether fish went up that ladder or the other ladder. And it hasn't happened. Lisa may have done it. I mean, it's possible. Right? Anybody aware of anything? Well, these are
total
counts.
Did you check in with her?
I've left a message and an email.
She did look at some of that over the years.
Good. That's good. Because I haven't seen any reports on it. All right, but it should exist. It seems like an obvious thing. Anyway, if you look at the counts, these counts of all fish, unclipped and clipped, well, across the board, they're total counts, both ladders. Right now, they're operating the river left roll gate, so the side of the river next to the trap. That should translate into attraction water for the trap. I'm just guessing because nobody's actually measured it, but it makes more sense to me that fish would find that ladder, the one with the trap, if the left roll gate is the one that's operating. According to Hodenson, for some reason, he doesn't know why, they switched to the middle roll gate when the season progresses. And I don't know why. They might have a reason, and that's the question I'm asking Lisa. If they do, then we're going to have more of a split between the two ladders and have less access to the fish going up the left-hand, the trap. But if she's amenable to it, I'd like to suggest that she operate the left roll gate throughout the season. It doesn't seem, I don't see why that's a problem. I mean, they're all kind of, geometry is similar.
So you're talking just operating left bank trap, nothing on right bank?
Hogenson would love to stick another trap in the right bank, but I can't imagine pulling that off. There would be a lot of coordination with E-Web, with NOAA, adding another trap that I don't think can happen. What do you think? Between now and July, adding a trap to the right bank ladder?
So what numbers you talking about? We had some early on, you know, it wasn't astronomical numbers by any means. It was like 100 fish.
Right, that's the goal, is to get 100 fish out. But if in fact the majority of the fish go through the left bank ladder in the trap, and we can operate from the second week of August on, and we get an average year or above average year, more like 2010, then we could probably remove between 300 and 400 hatchery fish. If we have, that's the luck. If they have to operate the right roll gate, and we only get a quarter of the fish up through that ladder, then we might not even hit the 100 fish. It's a 100 fish target. If we reduce by 100 fish the number of hatchery fish that get upstream, then we can knock back PHAS by a couple of percentage points above. But taking out 300 or 400 fish puts PHAS down below 10% basin-wide, unless we have a large number of hatchery fish spawning downstream, successfully spawning downstream.
Well, maybe if we find out that E-Web needs to operate that middle gate or the right roll gate for some critical reason, we could explore putting a trap over on that side of the ladder.
Is Kurt still on the phone?
Kurt, you still on the phone?
Yes.
Would you talk to your buddies there and find out why they're doing that?
Just operating whatever roll gate?
Yeah, is it, you know, you remember you were talking about how they used to move roll gates to clear silt out and things? There may be something that doesn't have anything to do with fish, that they're doing that and it's messing us up.
Okay. So the question I should ask is, can they help us out in trapping fish?
Yeah, tell them the problem that this is creating, and would that be something that do you actually have to do it this way? Or can you operate a different roll gate?
Okay.
Because I think the answer is probably down at the level you're getting with your friends over there, rather than coming out of Eugene.
Really? So they're just saying, "Oh, let's try this one."
he's got an established relationship with the operators up there.
All right. So what are the high points? Adaptive management, real-time monitoring. Be willing to pull the trap if relatively large numbers of wild fish or unclipped fish are headed upstream, and operate for probably August and September into October, 5 days a week.
And we have a signal for starting, and then what about ending? Is there any metric you guys are going to use for being done?
The counts are down to one or two fish every 2 weeks by middle of October. Right, so these are...
So you just run to the end of the season.
Right.
Well,
I try to hire people for 3 month blocks, so that works out. Bring them on board in July. So July, August, September. They'll be done early October.
So some history on this is we tried this way back when, like 02, 03, because we were wanting to get a handle on the hatchery stuff. In those years, you remember there were huge runs, and it was just a fiasco. Right. Right? Everybody was in agreement. It was just a big rodeo where you're dealing with thousands of fish, and it wasn't worth it trying to get the hatchery fish out because we thought that the impacts on the wilds were just way too high for the benefit that we were getting. So it was stopped. Now we're in a whole different world where the numbers aren't even... you know, a quarter of what we were dealing with back in those days.
Right,
so it makes them more viable to accomplish our goals without having the massive impacts on cooker and wild fish. So we need to keep in mind run size stuff when we're looking through this, because if we're projecting, you know, thousands and thousands of wild fish coming back, then we need to think about it a little bit more.
If we project thousands of wild fish coming back, then this is probably not needed.
It's true, but I mean the link between the hatchery run and the wild runs.
Right.
We'll have a lot of hot. Well, I don't know. We're in a totally new world now with the production changes and everything. So who knows what it could shake out? But so.
Yeah, I was kind of more thinking, okay, what's going to happen this year? But looking out into the future, this is. Not likely to be something we'll do into the future, but it will be something we'll do for the next few years.
Right. So are you going to write this up, Cam? Because it'll be something that NIMS will want to review, and we'll have to evaluate it and get back concurrence to the agencies for this operation. And I'll have to talk with Stephanie and others, coordinate on that front, because they deal with the E-Web ladder issues and all of that, so I'll do some coordination with them on that.
Okay.
And they'll want to see what we're talking about.
So any gaps, though? I mean, any red flags to anybody at this point?
The only red flag I have is I understand why you want to have the July 1st start time, you know, keep your options open. But the later you start, the more assurances you have you're not going to be affecting wild fish. Because it, you know, that tail's
right.
Going to diminish.
But the
so I would want
the decision point is when it drops down to the saddle.
Right. It's just when you start. I mean, when we start monkeying in the ladder, you know, that time, you know, the later the better, because there definitely is a, you know, bimodal thing. So I think our concerns would be when you start the start time of the trap operation.
I was trying to tie it together with the monitoring that has to happen at Leeburg. So I'm hiring people whose responsibility is going to be managing data acquisition and fish acquisition at Leeburg Dam. So they have to be there in July because, you know, July
can be the fish. Right, but what's the, I mean, go back to those graphs. What's going to be the management trigger point when you say trapping is okay? I mean, a steep decline, well, are you talking about you still have a couple hundred fish coming through the ladder, or are you talking about five wild fish? I mean, what's going to be that trigger?
I recognize that there is a trigger. It's going to be the steep decline. I haven't come up with a threshold yet. I mean, I'm just not there yet.
Okay.
So you're thinking a hard number?
Well, not necessarily, but the concern is that early trapping and impacting co-occurring wild Chinook. That's what the real concern is.
Okay.
And so minimizing that effect. And if it means, you know, we delay trapping for a few weeks to be sure that the bulk of the wild run is passed, then that's a good thing, especially if we only need to pull out 100 hatchery fish.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to pull out quite a bit more than 100 hatchery fish if it's possible to do it. We do have to have these people on station because I want to keep up with the data so that there's no delays, and but they're there for that.
I agree, but there's a trade-off with impacting wild Chinook in the
yeah,
land.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I just don't. I don't have a number for you, but I'm thinking about it now in the back of my head, and it could be. Oh, remember I said that there's a willingness to back off. We look for that very steep decline until we get down to low numbers, like, you know, what we think is probably based on history, you know, 5 or 10% of the wild run is left. Mm-hmm. But get to that point where we believe that's the case. Run the trap, see what we catch. And if we're impacting more wild fish than we're comfortable with, then we pull the trap back away and go in the following week or something like that. I'll work out those details, but I think this is the guts of it right here. We wait till just as you're saying, we wait till the bulk of the wild run is passed, then we're in the trap to try to deal with the excess hatchery fish that tend some years, many years, to come back late.
Is there going to be real-time reading of the right bank video?
I haven't thought about it, but that would be the ideal. I was kind of toying with the idea of having, since it'll be two people, having everything double read. I'm not perfectly comfortable with the Samusoft software, and if in my history of WFW, the gold standard for monitoring is to have everything measured twice, compare the measurements. If they match, you're golden. If they don't match, you go back and find out where the errors are. And I'm inclined to go that, because of the lawsuit, to have the highest possible quality data set as we can have in real time. That means everything gets read twice by two different people. Then they compare what they see. So adding in the both ladders, maybe.
Well, the value of having that other one read, too, is you could say, okay, there's wild fish coming through, but 50% of them are going on right bank, and we're only impacting half, or whatever the distribution will be between the ladders. That type of thing. Or it could be 100% of the wild fish are coming through the trap right now, mm-hmm. and that's not a good thing.
Right. Both ladders, real time. I'm emailing those data to Stephanie, too.
Every day. Well, it's something to think about, if it's possible. I'm sure your guys are really, really good, so double verification versus having one guy on left and one on right. We can work that out.
Okay. That's all I got.
All right.
Well, I'll write it up. It'll be by next week. I'll distribute it to the group, review it, pass it on if you want, or you and I can go back and forth once before it gets dumped on Stephanie and Melissa's desk, and then I'll fix whatever you think needs to get fixed. And so within a couple of weeks, people thinking about, is this a viable plan?
Thanks, Kim. All right, moving on to the next item. Is Jeff Ziller on the phone now?
Let me see if he's available.
Sure.
So do any of the other folks have comments, concerns on the Liebert stuff? Anything?
Sounds like a good idea to me. It's the timing and the triggers.
Yeah.
Has there been any modifications made to that trap, or is it the same as that it's been forever?
It's tweaked by Hogan every year, but it's basically the same as it always has been. It's a deep, steep pit.
Yeah, physically pass each.
He's actually not available right now.
Oh, okay.
Is there any? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what his time frame might look like. If it'd be worth just having this discussion without him, or trying to deal with the other category and coming back to this.
Yeah, we can move on to the other category. There's quite a bit there,
and there's really no pressing decision point yet for the.
No.
Trapping operation.
No, we just wanted to talk about kind of the protocol, last year's protocol, how we're going to move forward. Various folks have certain thoughts about how we might move forward.
Yeah.
We just need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And Cam, you might be able to speak to that just as well anyways. I mean, we have talked about it briefly.
Yeah, but I think Jeff wants to really engage in this, and
yeah,
there's time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So
we'll wait.
Yeah.
All right.
Ask him how long till he's available. Is that half an hour or 5 minutes?
Well, it's hard to say. Hold on.
No, if he's not available, we could always punt this discussion for...
Yeah, it's impossible to say.
Yeah. Well,
he's involved in that other, the downstream passing call, and it's unfortunate these were conflicting meetings.
Perhaps we could just table this discussion for just a future conference call or something, because I know the Corps certainly is interested in hearing what Jeff has to say. And
that might make the most sense at this point. Is there some time sensitivity, or what's our kind of drop dead time?
We'll move on to the other category, and if Jeff somehow finds a way to get over, we'll talk. If not, we'll just put it off into the future.
Let's circle
Thank
back around to
flexible.
It, then make sure we talk a little bit about it.
Okay, we can do that. We can do that too. Okay. So, the last category, there's various items in there. One of them was yours. You wanted a status update on the intent at Foster. I wasn't able to find out who was leading that effort, or I didn't talk to anybody about it.
Well,
Dave, do you know anything about that?
Well, at least from the core standpoint, I'm pretty sure Fenton is working on that, I'm going to walk around and see if he's here, which he's not.
I think Fenton's on the same call that Jeff is. Yeah. I thought I heard him earlier.
Fenton's reading that call.
Maybe they're talking about this very thing.
I'll talk to Fenton.
Right. I need to know, I mean, I know it's boots on the ground stuff, but am I going to be pit tagging fish?
Okay.
Or just sticking Floyd tags in them?
I'll call Fenton today and get the scoop.
And ask him how many pit tags I can have. Thousands. Okay. Many thousands.
Another item I threw on there, HGMPs, just because there's general interest.
Yeah, let's put that one at the very last, because I needed to talk to Dave about that one.
Okay.
And so if folks don't want to stick around for that,
So really on the other category, I just had potential future agenda items. We talked about release strategies and discussing that in terms of best practices at a future meeting. I don't know if we're really prepared to talk about it now.
Release strategies of...
Well, we talked about last month about how we currently operate in terms of fish size and when we release them.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't know what the adult releases. Okay.
Yeah, just kind of what the best practices are, what we're doing now, what we can do better in terms of how we release fish.
Okay. Well, Ryan Harnish had some interesting points to make from the South San Diego steelhead releases. There wasn't a lot. There's still residual problems. Residual problems with a tag burden, I think. But one of the things that seemed to be pretty clear from his presentation, and I haven't reviewed his report yet, was the issue of high condition factor being associated with low success to migrate to Willamette Falls. So, that's a fairly easy test, basically, if we can use our pit technology to rear fish in different ponds to different condition factors and release those fish, and then see how they migrate with the pit tags to Willamette Falls. We've invested a lot in the juvenile detection capabilities at Willamette Falls, and if we get 10 or 20,000 pit tags in fish that are reared to low conditions, so below about 9.5, or about 9.5, 9.8, something like that, and the normal condition factor is 1.1, 1.2, it's a direct comparison that we could get in quick order in April. The question is set it up as a formal experiment for execution in 2016, or scramble, get tags in fish before they're released in April this year? And I wanted 2016 because I want to think about it. I want to design an experiment that's based on pit tag detections at Willamette Falls with adequate sample sizes to get at SARS 2 for those fish. One of the issues that is in the HGMP draft HGMP that Elisa's working on, and I'm sure is going to show up in Chuck Pevin's version, is getting an idea of SARS on our summer steelhead program. And we don't have a way of doing that now. So if we're going to invest money, we've got to get kind of multiple benefits from it. And juvenile emigration and small to adult returns are two key elements for the original Pevin and Keefe monitoring program for steelhead, something we haven't pulled off. Are these fish leaving? And at what rate are they coming back?
The other thing that jumped out to me from Ryan's work was the size at release. So if there's a way to, because they look like they're big, big fish. So if there's opportunities at the hatchery to slow those fish down a little bit, so they're more smolt size fish. You know, I think of it like that 200 millimeter cutoff. You know, wanting to stay below that, and then your residuals. Your residual rate goes down. You know, once you start getting those big fish, they just
220 and up, right? So there's a conflict there from a hatchery perspective. The Pevin and Keefe document kind of alludes over and over to releasing hatchery fish that look like wild fish. And the reality of it is, for whatever reason, if you try to release a one-year-old hatchery smolt at the size of a two- or three-year-old wild smolt, they won't migrate because they'll be pre-smolts and par. I don't know why that is the case, but you get high smolting rates from hatchery fish when they're larger than wild fish that have the same high smolting rate. It's just a strange phenomenon that is cross-species. You've got to get them big to get them to migrate, but they don't have to be too big. I think there's issues with that. If they get too big, you start getting residualism, because they are precocious, or essentially precocious males. So that's probably tractable, but it wouldn't be a major change. It wouldn't be something where we would be saying, we want to see the 150 millimeter typical wild smolt size, because they would not go anywhere. They would just be a par release, even at 2 years old.
No, it's just, what I was thinking is just looking at if there's any opportunity. There may not be, because of the water temperatures at the hatchery and stuff, to really slow them down to, you know, get them a little bit smaller size. I don't know what the possibilities are, but at least looking at, you know, what's feasible, because, you know, for that program, I mean, none of the agencies want higher residualization of these fish.
Oh,
that's not what they're intended for. So just, you know, what can we tweak management wise to solve this problem as best as we possibly can?
Now bear in mind that the residualism rate that Ryan came up with, he knows it was an overestimate,
yeah,
and it
yeah,
may
no
have
doubt
been
doubt.
A gross overestimate.
Right.
Okay.
It likely is.
So it's an issue. We're aware of that, and I think his observation that the condition factor was a very significant both years factor associated with a lack of migration to Willamette Falls. That's something that's tractable. Just release not necessarily smaller, a lot smaller fish, but certainly leaner fish. And there are feed options.
That's one of the things that we really need to look at is not approach your hatchery managers and tell them, well, you want smaller fish, and their assumption is, well, we're going to feed them less feed. And so the nutritional stuff, we end up with disease problems. That's
right. Right.
Every time they say hold them back, then they basically the fish die, because you can have different feed mixes. You can get larger vitamin packs. Watch the nutrition, you know, your fish meal and the feed, so you can feed them a high-grade feed, but just not bulking them up. There's nutritional stuff that's out there that we don't use very often that would allow us to do that. It's the easiest thing is if you've got cold water, then you just throw a ton of feed at it continually. Otherwise, you've got to be smart about it. And it's we have warmer water in a lot of cases that's... Not very many places have got water that is too cold to raise the fish in.
So how about you and I and Brett have a sit down and talk about, because I don't know what happened with the plumbing issue at South San Yam with the engineering of the dam. Somebody alluded to it. Did they change the water intake for the hatchery?
No,
is that the,
no, that's still on bay one. Side bay
okay,
one.
That didn't change at all. I knew it came up in one of the presentations and I didn't follow it. It sounded like they changed something, but okay. It was the person that was talking about all of the radio receivers
that
had been placed everywhere a fish could possibly have made its way downstream. And
we can do that. I think there's he certainly has the option to change some of that stuff.
Right.
Usually what they're doing is the goal always has been raise more fish and raise bigger fish. And so we target it, trying to raise absolutely as many fish as we can and just pork them out. And they survive well. Those that migrate survive well when they're big.
And you end up having the best fishery in the upper Willamette for summer steelhead. That was where I caught my first summer steelhead in the South San Diego. So, anyway.
I know when I worked in Idaho, we would raise just monster fish. They were the ugliest looking steelhead in the world, but those ones survive. 10% of them stayed in the river. So if you release some 3 million fish, you get 300,000 residual rainbow trout.
We call them planters.
They have great feedback because we'd stock them in March, and everybody loved all the trout they were stocking.
That's not our goal.
Tons of. We don't want to do that. So that's. I think we need to look at something different. The stuff they were doing at OHRC on these Chinook surrogates was looking at almost same sort of similar body conformation was a big indicator on migration.
Yeah.
And we're. This may, I don't know what all they've found, but then those are salmon instead of steelhead, but it may well be the same thing.
So how do I get that onto the list of project concepts for 2016 funding? What fiscal year is that? Is that the 15 fiscal year? This would be fish that would be released in April of 2016.
Yeah.
Where do I address a proposal to? How do I do
April
that?
April 2016.
That is being called an unsolicited proposal and ending up getting round filed. Because I'm not going to spend any time on it unless there's some reasonable chance that it would get funded.
It's got to be right now.
It would be, let me think about this for a second. It wouldn't be CRFM funded, so it would probably come out of our own.
Yeah, it would have to come out of Burns' budget. You're talking about for a release group in 16, right, Cam?
Correct. Unless you want to push it off to 17, but I don't think that's what people want to do.
I like your idea of pit tagging separate groups of fish and rearing them under whatever varying conditions you're talking about. But it'd be great to see that. I think it sounds like something worthwhile exploring.
Okay.
So it'd probably be up to one of us to see what funding may or may not be available, but at the same time... the hatchery concepts are kind of different in that they don't always go through the R&E team, and I'm not sure how that ties in terms of what's a priority to the region or not, and I don't know if it needs to go there or not.
Well, the hatchery management, R&E paid Ryan to come up with ideas of how we can improve the program. National Marine Fisheries Service has expressed an interest in it. I've got 30 years of experience doing rearing and release experiments on steelhead, and I'm willing to write a proposal if it's not an unsolicited proposal. You have to ask me to do it,
sure.
I'll do it, and I'll come up with a reasonable
solution. We need to look into that a little bit more and convince whoever that it's a good idea, basically, is what needs to happen.
Okay.
So you had some kind of rough estimate of the budget. That would help.
Dave, are you on board with that?
I am. I think it's a good idea, and I agree. I thought it was Andy talking. It'd be nice to have some sense of a ballpark estimate, of what it's going to take to get it.
What is it? What do pit tags cost you guys?
I have no idea.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
We've been discussing that quite a bit around here, and there's nobody next to me to ask at this point. But shoot an email to Rich.
I just sent an email there. Yeah. With a rough estimate.
Shoot an email to me asking for...
If it's $1 million study, it's going to be a no.
Oh, it's not. Okay, it's independent of the pit tags themselves. I'm thinking several thousand pit tags per release group, and I had envisioned just two release groups, a fat, long, lean, and fat assassin. And our detection rates for spring release fish... Willamette Falls are between 2 and 6%. So we want sample sizes of detections in the north, well north of 30 per group. So we want 10 times that many, 300 fish.
Yeah, and you're not talking about additional or fish in addition to what the normal release is. You're talking about using those
right,
fish.
That production fish that are reared under
yep,
two different
gotcha.
Scenarios. A Pittac detection nope. arrays are already in place.
Yeah.
It's 40.
Go forth and write a concept.
Something like that, max, absolute max.
But
that's independent of the Pittacs. If the sample size says we need 20,000 Pittacs,
yeah.
okay, and I don't know what they cost, what do I do? So.
We need to find out what they cost.
All right.
We'll find out.
Somebody send me an email requesting what you want and when you want a draft proposal with solid background, literature review, sample sizes, and a firm budget. And then it doesn't become unsolicited. I hate that. Come up with a great idea and say, oh, that's great. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So this is research to evaluate management changes of the summer steelhead program in response to the hatchery harmony results from last year, right?
Right. And a huge body.
All right, I'm emailing folks right now about Pittac. Yeah, are we done with this?
I think so.
Wanted to talk about the summer seal at HCMP for just a moment, if this is the appropriate time.
Sure, Dave.
So, yeah, as you guys know, I've mentioned that probably the past couple meetings that Chuck Pevin had been hired through some funding at BPA to try to put together a framework using the NIMS HCMP template of a update the summer seal at HCMP. I think the last version floating around out there was 2004, if I recall. And he is nearing completion of that. And when he's done, we would like to, and it's, as I understand it, it's full of lots of data holes because he doesn't have the ability to populate a lot of this data. It's a standard HCMP with tables of performance metrics and standards, blah, blah, blah. A lot of those are blank as well because we need ODFW's help. And anyhow, whatever the thing ultimately looks like, I think he's doing the best job he can to put together as complete a draft HCMP as possible. We wanted to get that out to folks probably sometime in early March with the idea that at the next HMT meeting, we would have a normal meeting in the morning and then the afternoon would be devoted to this summer steelhead work group that we've been talking about trying to form for 2 years or more. And with folks that have vested interest in that particular program, you know, hanging out with them, we'll invite Chuck Pevin down to that meeting in Salem, and he can essentially walk through what he's done with the draft HCMP, identifying all the gaps. And you guys, like I said, well, our goal is to try to get you guys a copy at least a week in advance of the meeting so you can glance through it and see what he's done. And he can walk through it page by page if you guys so desire. Sounds kind of painful, but probably just hitting the big, you know, the big ticket items that that need additional information, et cetera, et cetera. And after the meeting, we can then begin the process of the agencies working together to try to complete a draft, you know, get it as whole as possible, and with the ultimate goal of submitting it to NIMS at some point in the future. And so that's our thoughts at this point. And as I understand it from Dan Spear over at BPA, that Chuck is pretty close to completing that draft as best as he can take it. And so you guys should see something in March.
So Davis, Lance, does it incorporate kind of the latest, you know, RM&E stuff that we've been working through on steelhead?
I'm pretty sure it does because I know that he worked with some folks at ODF&W. I know he was constantly emailing us for information. So I think he did his best. And he also, you know, looked, I think took the Mark Johnson, Craig Tynes, was it Mark and Craig Tynes, whoever it was, or maybe it was Tom and Tynes. He used a couple of those papers, summer steelhead review papers that were done, or they were steelhead review papers. He tried to incorporate the latest and greatest science as well as RM&E into this. But again, there there's going to be lots of data gaps, and that's where we need to help them. But I think, you know, it's going to look hopefully pretty good.
Are there program changes proposed in this HGMP?
No, not that I'm aware of. Again, I haven't seen it, but I don't. He wasn't asked to do anything like that. Simply to attempt to identify, and I think what he ended up doing was going to the ODFW's website and actually just looking at the annual operating plans for each one of the hatchery program facilities that releases summers. We starting with Foster, and then just trying to use those numbers. So I think they're probably even populated with 2013. You know, operational plan numbers, but no, there's no changes that I know of proposed.
In the last version for the Chinook HGMP and the NCHUC's monitoring plan, he, I'm pretty sure, had quite a bit of material about looking at the issues of PHAS, which is complicated with steelhead, spawner abundance. Do you know whether that got integrated? I mean, that relates to what my responsibilities might be if we end up writing an HGMP that says we need to do spawning ground surveys or something like that.
Oh, in terms of monitoring you're talking about?
Right.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. So, you know, when we get it, we can all tear through it.
It was prominent in the Chinook one. And
pardon me?
It was certainly prominent in the Chinook HGMP and monitoring plan.
Yeah. Well, I think there was recognition that, you know, there's orders of magnitude more monitoring for the Spring Chinook program than there is the Steelhead program. But you'll find out. We'll get it to you as soon as he gets it to BPA or Dan, we'll send it out.
Well, the bottom line is the HGMP has to be developed by the agencies, CORE and ODFW. You guys got to be comfortable with it before you would submit it to us. So.
Yeah, I don't see this any different than the Spring Chinook programs because, you know, when I joined the CORE, which was now about 5 years ago, at that time, Mindy Simmons had hired R2 to work on drafts of the 4 Spring Chinook programs because they weren't being done. So, you know, there was a contractor that put the framework for those together, and there's a contractor to put the framework for this together. So in my view, it's no different. I think I'm quite happy that somebody else did the legwork on this.
Any other comments or questions? All right. So Dave will send that out as soon as he gets it, probably early March, hopefully, and then if we can, we get put on the agenda for next month to talk about, or do what Dave suggested, maybe split it, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, whatever works best.
So we can either talk about cougar adult trap operations or Lance.
Not looking good.
Okay.
That call's still going on.
Well, so
might be better to have a doodle poll or something and find out when folks are available.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
What were the issues that needed to be discussed on Cougar?
Whether we wanted to start filtering fish earlier and how much earlier. It's the benefit of doing the recycling a week earlier, 2 weeks earlier.
Ziller had some thoughts last month that perhaps we should move that September 1st date earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't entirely clear as to why he said he might be able to discuss it a little bit at the next HMT, which is what we're trying to do. It's just kind of, where do we go from there? I don't know if he had some knowledge or if there was some data that he was referring to as to why he thought that.
We had a sit down with Rich, and I think Griff, but I know Rich.
Yeah, we've talked about the idea of you know, doing some more genetics work with the adults as well, trying to get a better sense of what is going on out there.
Yeah, the 2014 genetic samples weren't scheduled to be processed, and so we're pushing to get another year's worth of assignments, pedigree assignments, to all the fish that these guys sampled at Cougar to try to make a more informed decision.
So is that going to get funded, or what's the latest?
I'm hopeful.
I'm assuming that's why Griff asked me yesterday for the summary information on all the fish that had been sampled and where they'd been sampled.
What's the turnaround on that to get those analyzed? How quick could it be done, do you think?
It could be 3 months. Mm-hmm. It could be 3 days. It depends on how much money is being thrown at the
problem. Not super fast.
The Clackamas, they had a system in place where they could turn things around. Was it a week? Oh. But that's not what we have. We've got a few months.
Okay.
What's the cost, roughly?
Roughly $43 per specimen to process the DNA, and then it depends on the complexity of the analysis. Mm-hmm. So if you're paying a postdoc for 6 months of analysis and write-up and journal articles and all that stuff, then it ramps right up. So, but the benefits are that there's no need to add in all of the juvenile DNA samples that have been part of the program for years now. It's a more focused question. Which fish came back when that assigned to spawners that were passed 4 and 5 years ago above Cougar?
So I don't know what the Corps thinks of this, but from my perspective, I mean, this genetics stuff is, for Cougar, is absolutely critical. And, you know, we've been using it year after year after year to inform our management decisions. And it's kind of one of the big RM&E things that we actually use kind of in season, in real time, to help guide our actions. And I think we've been doing pretty good based off of the pedigree analysis. So it seems critical to continue to do this, especially since we're finally got it started and we have, you know, full generations coming back that we can continue to monitor.
I think that's going forward. I mean, that's my read, is that the CRFM funding is going to be available for that focus question on the adult samples that are in hand.
Okay. And 15, we're still going to collect the DNA samples, and hopefully we'll continue to fund that analysis. Did you ask about 15?
You know, I don't go to those R&E meetings. I just know they get ranked. And
we should definitely collect. It's cheap.
Yeah, I think collecting will continue. Yeah, the question is will we continue to analyze it? I don't know the answer to that.
But we have a backlog of Fall Creek genetics we need to do, too. It's really expensive. Collecting is nothing for there.
Yeah.
And then for me, I was just wondering where Jeff was coming from in terms of moving that date back, because the data we saw at the reviews kind of indicated September 1 seemed appropriate.
That's why we need Jeff on the phone, and so there's no horrible rush.
Yeah, we can put it on the next.
I think the samples are going to be, they're going to start processing them pretty soon. So when the money comes forward, we will certainly have the answers before you guys are going to toss the fish in the truck.
His call should be done in, what, 15?
Noon. Yeah.
Do you want to see if they... I can stick a note in front of them. See if it's wrapping up.
You could try one more time.
Sure. Hold on a sec.
So on the Cougar survey, since we're waiting, so what were the final numbers? I mean, in the reintroduction plan we wanted a minimum of 400 females above Cougar. It says minimum. I mean, that was the threshold for needed escapement. What were the final numbers on the total number of females, hatchery and wild, that was put above Cougar?
They were close.
Close was it was 495 females, I think. Look, let me send you
401 hatchery females. 60, I think it was 60 unclipped, and then 60 ad clipped ones that came from Cougar.
About 60.
Those are the females. And then on the males, we had 141 hatchery males, 82 no marks, and 9 ad clip.
From the trap.
Those are the last numbers I have, anyway.
So the total, what do you have, Chad, for unclipped that went above cougar from the trap?
Unclipped prior to 9/11, that was 69 males, 49 females. I got a copy of that.
49.
Yeah, it was 49.
So
after. 11 unmarked males and 4 marked females, plus some hatchery fish, too.
That's not much.
Yeah, it got kind of confusing.
So it was 53 females went from the trap above cougar. Is that right? Am I reading that right? So 49 plus the 4 below it,
yeah.
2 hard rock,
yep.
After 9.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Total to hard rock.
Total hard rock, yeah.
80 unmarked males total.
And then there was a total of 8 hatchery that came from the trap and went above cougar.
Yeah.
Excuse me, are you guys showing us a spreadsheet on the desktop there, or what are you looking at?
No, this is just something I grabbed real quick this morning, just kind of the last 3 years.
Okay.
And the cougar, all the total numbers and their dispositions.
You have this, Dave, somewhere on your computer.
So the total.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
462.
Did it come from you, Doug?
Okay, it came from Chad.
No,
Chad.
I just threw this together real quick, yeah. Right before we left this morning.
It's just last year's numbers. Yeah.
Okay.
It's on that screen.
I know I've seen it. I just can't find the bloody thing. But that's right. Go
462 females total, of which 53 were unmarked fish. And most of the marked fish came from the hatchery, but a handful came from the cougar trap.
Do we have something that we could put up on the screen? Jeff said he might be available in a couple of minutes. Sometimes it's helpful if we're all looking at the same.
Kelly, we're waiting to hear from Jeff on my moving
on
the
what
date
now.
Forward.
I didn't say this. I just did this.
No, but from the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, he's got 4.
He's got, or maybe.
Yeah.
We're looking for something.
And honestly, I'm not sure if he has something specific in mind that he would find useful.
We'll play by ear.
Right. So it seemed like there was some confusion from folks on the 400 number, right?
Well, there was confusion, at least from my perspective, in that, is that number a minimum or a target?
Right.
Because they're different. I mean, they mean different things.
So we should talk about that. I think the way it was written up is we wanted at least 400 females going above cougar. So having that as kind of the bottom end of it. But the question then comes, okay, well, how many more hatchery fish are added in on top of that 400 number?
You have a range, basically.
And we don't want it, you know, where we're adding in, you know, lots more hatchery fished above the 400 number, because we want to be mindful of, you know, promoting adaptation, the local genetics, and all of that stuff. So
where we should be, we're going to try to target 400, 200 at a minimum every year, using the hatchery to get there, and hope that is a very small number of fish.
But I think Lance is saying is you want to have a maximum threshold in terms of how many hatchery fish we put above. Does that make sense?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So like no fewer than 400, but no more than 500.
If you're using hatchery.
Yeah. Well, what we used to have it was percentages.
Yeah.
But that didn't work out that great because we ended up having real low wild runs.
So before it was like a 50-50 split.
And that would have been, we would not have reached their escapement goal.
Right. And we say we want fewer, we want wild fish to outnumber hatchery fish up there, essentially. But that wouldn't work because the spawning escapements were getting too low because of few wild fish.
Well, we could talk around and around, but we're going to go with 400, 200 using hatchery fish to reach there. And when downstream passage issues are resolved, we're going to not do that. And we're going to have much far, far fewer hatchery fish.
But how many more than 400 do we do? You see, you could keep piling on hatchery fish if you really
want
to.
We won't. We don't want to. We want to see 600, 400 female and 200 male naturally produced fish come back to Cougar, and then we're not taking any hatchery fish.
True, but I guess my example would be last year we had, even though it was slightly more, it was like, was that a mistake?
It was a mistake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a very small mistake as far as I'm concerned in terms of nailing a target. We were pretty darn close.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll buy that.
I mean, it wasn't like we took an extra 1,000 fish up there. There was quite a bit of back and forth, too, on what exactly that meant.
And that's what I was getting at. Is it a target or a minimum? So.
It's both.
I'd like to ask a question, though, too, is that the Corps is taking all their fish to Hard Rock. We're taking all of our fish to the 430 bridge just upstream of Hard Rock. Although we took 117 females clear to Frizzell, which is another, 5 miles above that, trying to utilize some more of that habitat. I mean, is there any thoughts about that? Because the fish don't seem to be moving upstream as much as they move downstream.
I would like to take a closer look at that. But from my perspective, they're taking up fish that, for the most part, were born up there. And if they put them down low, they'll migrate upstream, okay, because they're looking for home. If we put our hatchery fish up there or naive to that reach, we want them deeply embedded in the system so they're more likely to spawn up high. If we put them in the reservoir as hatchery fish, they're less likely to go up and successfully spawn, I think. I'll look into it more. We've got the spawner distribution, red locations and all that, but I'm perfectly happy with the majority of the hatchery fish being outplanted up high just so we get some spawning up high. And I trust the wild fish will go back to where they want to go.
I agree, Cam. This is Jeff.
Oh,
hey, Jeff.
All right. So we're just talking about cougar trap operations. And last month, Jeff, you talked about potentially wanting to move that September 1st date earlier, and we were curious about the rationale or information you have or may not have as to when that would be and why.
Well, the why is to keep fish that are destined to go to the South Fork below the dam and the main stem McKenzie below Cougar Dam. That's the why. And the date is up in the air. I'm sure Cam told you. You know, we're biting at the bit to get that new information from the genetic analysis of 2014 done,
okay,
so that we can take a look at it. And barring anything that not having that, I'm thinking we probably move that date up to somewhere in the I'm thinking July 1. And just tag and transport everything from July 1 on down. Just looking at the number of wild fish that are in that early group, it's not a ton, but it is some. And I'm not comfortable putting those wild fish upstream from Cougar Dam.
It just seemed to me that the data showed September 1 was kind of a more of a clear break.
It definitely is a clearer break, but it doesn't change the fact that there are wild fish, unassigned fish from that earlier time period that are being put above. I agree. You know, it's a very clear break in that late part of the season, but it's that doesn't solve the issue.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of a wait and see, really.
So I didn't tell Jeff that it, if I understood correctly, it sounds like there was, it's looking pretty good that the 2014 samples are going to be analyzed. Is that a true statement?
That's what I've heard, but I think we need some verification.
I need to check with Griff to make sure, but I think that is the idea.
And Cam, did you have some sense again about if that would be in a timely, like meet our timing needs?
Yes, I think that's the case.
Okay, so Jeff, that's where...
I mean, and then sort of following along the lines of what Jeff was saying, if we were to do that, start recycling these fish earlier, and if they continue to show up at Cougar, just keep moving them back down, would that be the idea?
No, I don't think...
No, it's two and you're up. You know, you come in, you get tagged. If you come back again, you go up.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that clarification.
And again, you know, this is not a new idea. We've had this idea for probably close to 12, 15 years. That was part of the SCAP group that was working on upstream passage at Cougar. That was how we were going to operate it.
That's probably why I'm unaware.
You got to be old like me.
Getting there.
Do we have data from 13 or 12 that indicate what proportion of fish that we put above Cuckoo were unassigned? And what is that proportion? You know?
I don't want to guess off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's been in several reports, pretty lined out, and the most recent one came out from Nick Sard just a couple weeks ago. So the proportion of fish that are unassigned is coming back to Cougar with the recycling in place is low. I believe it was under 20%.
Yeah,
that's my recollection, is that with the recycling in place, 80% of the fish we put up there kind of belonged up there. They were born up there.
So we could say that at a maximum up to 20% we're stealing from below Cougar or Mainston.
Right, so you've got to throw in the issue of fluvial production.
We right, have so, it, so it's probably not 20%, but somewhere in that range.
But on the post-September 1, there was Cougar fish that were down below,
right,
so it
exactly
kind of comes out of wash.
That's what I was wondering about.
Sure, yeah, because you'd have some seeding population.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reality is you're never going to get perfect on this stuff, and, I mean, we could try to do as best as we can, but there's always going to be fish doing what they want to do, and it could be out of the area that they came from at this micro scale. You know, we're managing at a subpopulation level.
No, at the review last week, the study in the South CNAM showed that the population above phosphorus contributing to below the project. Are we looking at that in the McKinsey? Because it didn't sound like we were, but
we have
that data. Was part of my conversation with Griff yesterday. He wanted to know what sample sizes we had for down the South Fork McKenzie natural spawners that I
produced. Oh, okay. It's related to that. Okay.
So the way you do that is you take the DNA clips from carcasses, treat them with tender loving care because it's difficult to extract useful DNA from decomposed carcasses, and then assign them to above or not above spawners. And I don't know how they're going to resolve the issue of bad fluvial spawners that, I mean, they might have to use the juvenile data or something to adjust it, but
gotcha.
They'll do the same thing that they did at Foster.
All right.
And I imagine they'll find the same thing, that the above Cougar spawners are contributing to below Cougar recruits.
Okay.
At some level.
So I'll verify, or myself or Dave can verify what the status of that work is, and then we could talk about it later at a future meeting. Unless there's any other comments or questions about kind of Harmony or the operation itself?
Well, I would like to have a more thorough treatment of the unclipped spawners that we've sampled elsewhere in the basin, too. I mean, we're focusing on the South Fork, but we also take DNA clips and have for years from all unclipped fish in the main stem. tributaries upon it. So those samples are archived, they're available for processing, and they should be able, we should be able to answer questions about, well, what proportion of the main stem spawners pedigree back to above cougar uplands.
Yeah. I guess from my standpoint, I haven't talked with Stephanie too much about this, but you know, moving it to July 1st, that's a 2-month change, and that's a pretty big change. And maybe I'm not familiar with all of the recent data and stuff, but we need to talk through it a little bit more and make sure that that's a good thing to do if we decide to move that way.
Also, Lance, the data that we take a look at for 2014, you know, if it shows, you know, very little in the way of wild fish or unassigned fish in that early group, you know, we can certainly change that potential. But I think for right now, we should kind of talk about going to that date and then see what the data shows, and then make a decision based on another year of sampling. That would be my plan of attack at this point.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think we need to talk about it more.
Yeah, we don't have any of that stuff in front of us, but we need to go back and look at it. Because, you know, it seemed to me that the September 1 was working pretty good.
I guess
we moved wild fish up there. We have a population that's probably not in the best of shape in the main stem and lower South Fork there. I don't, you know, given everything else that we're having to deal with right now, I don't feel comfortable at all putting those fish upstream there without any kind of guarantee that we're going to have downstream passage at Cougar in the near future. We're working on a downstream migrant facility for Lookout Point right now, and spending money on that, we haven't even got Cougar figured out.
Well, we can talk about it more. I guess one plus is, at least if my memory served me right, it seemed fish that came back twice assigned correctly to above the project, but I could be off on that.
Oh, no, that worked splendidly. So the fish that came back the second time were, it was a huge 80% were had proved that they were more above. So it went from a 20% to 80% just by doing the recycling.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts from the group? Otherwise, like I said, we'll verify that harmony and we'll talk about it next month probably, or maybe later.
Yeah, and I think that the real thing in my mind, the other side of the coin, is that recycling program and the cougar fish that end up staying down below cougar. You know what?
Sorry, say that again. Cougar fish.
The cougar, the right. Fish that came from above cougar now spawning down below cougar.
Yeah. Right.
So
the contribution.
What is the contribution from above? Well, and I would like to see it South Fork and elsewhere, because it's possible that those fish distribute. So, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, Jeff's concern is a real one, and we share that. But on the other side of the coin, those cougar fish that come back that were produced from above cougar, in my mind, are special fish. Sure, they're one generation removed from the hatchery, but they went through conditions and they came back, and it's amazing that they did. And so they had selective pressures that were different than any other McKenzie fish in my mind. They got through the reservoir, they somehow got through the RO, the turbid, whatever, and they came back to cougar tail race. There's definitely different selection pressure upon those fish than any others. And so we want to build upon that, those fish too.
So we do too. We just want to do it with a fish passage in place.
Likewise. Yep.
So we ended up with a straw man. Start the recycling as early as July 1, but we'll discuss it further after we assume we'll have 2014 data in hand to help inform the decision.
I think we want to think about that date.
Well, I think we need data first. I'd be real hesitant to make any decisions on changing a date without any data to back it up. I'd like to see numbers first, right, and then talk about
making a decision. So it assumes we'll have the data in hand before we make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, the existing data that we have, is that pulled together somewhere that folks can look at?
Yeah, Nick really put it. I did a nice job putting it together graphically and with tables, with numbers, stuff like that.
Okay.
The graphs are pretty telling. They're the best ones in the report.
Good.
Nicely written report, I think, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, there's a separate report for that, or was that in the review?
It's in the review, but I think it's a support. It's a report, because I got PDF. Where did I get the PDFs?
Yeah, who did you get it from?
I think I got them from Mark, so he's a co-author. So,
okay.
The report's out, so, for 2013.
When you
guys,
say...
I guess I'm okay with the July date, but the reality is we shouldn't be passing any fish up there. You know, we shouldn't have a date. And the only reason I'm backing up to July 1 is because, you know, the majority of fish seem to come in, the earliest fish are going to probably be the most likely fish to be going up and over. But, you know, backing up from there, you shouldn't be passing any fish over that dam that are destined to spawn downstream from that dam, and you shouldn't have a date. Every fish that comes to the trap should be recycled downstream. That's my real position, and I guess I'm looking at July 1 as kind of a compromise.
I think that depends on how well the recycling works at getting the true cougar fish.
Right, and it did appear to work fairly well. And that, like, 80% of the fish that actually did go over the dam a second time were fine there.
Yeah, I got a question for the group, I guess. It sounds like these management decisions that we're talking about here, are we creating genetically isolated populations, and is that a good thing?
I don't know. For my mind, that's not really a concern right now, because we're not even getting replacement.
Yeah, I know. I was wondering, are we even getting replacement downstream?
Over the long term? Yeah. Over the short term?
How about over the short term? How about over the past, you know, couple of generations? I don't know. I was asking Cameron that question, too. I was wondering if he has enough data to make a determination of that. I'm just curious. No, obviously we know we're not getting replacement above cougar. I'm wondering how well that population of fish below cougar is doing.
You mean specifically in the South Fork Mackenzie below cougar?
I guess I was thinking more above Leeburg. You know, I think you call it the wild focus area.
The wild fish sanctuary.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm not sure that we really know the answer to that. We do know that we haven't, you know, over the past 20 years anyway, we haven't dropped below about 600-700 fish. That's about all we can say.
Right. Yeah.
Any final thoughts before we adjourn? All right, see you next month, third Wednesday.
Is the HGMP discussion just for you?
I don't know. We still have some time, Dave. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Chinook HGMPs, and I'm not sure if folks are interested in that, or if we need to. I mean, we don't have Steve here in particular that's critical for ODFW. I guess an update is we're still wanting to finalize the HGMPs, the four Chinook HGMPs, and get them from the Corps submitted, work out the remaining issues so that we can move forward with our evaluation. And so there's still some things that need to be ironed out amongst all of our agencies. For the McKenzie one in particular, that's what I wanted to talk to Dave about. But the other three are back at the core, and hopefully you guys are working on them and we'll get them to us shortly.
I guess my update is very brief. You and I talked for quite a bit yesterday about this issue, but my update to you and the group is that I have very, very clear orders right now from Joyce not to work anymore on the HGMPs until she gives me further direction. As far as I know, she's working through some of the HGMP issues, as you were calling them, at a higher level, clearly, than me. So she has given me very clear direction not to do any work on those at this point.
Why? Do we know a reason, Dave?
I thought I just said it, but she is working.
Yeah, but why is Joyce saying that?
Why is Joyce saying she's working? I don't know. I'm not sure what your question is.
I think there are issues, and we've been doing this for how long now, that we haven't been able to come to an agreement. So I think Joyce is trying to work those issues. Is that correct, Dave?
That is. We submitted. Oh gosh, I don't know. I've lost track. But we put a timeline together. I think there's been 6 submittals in 2 years so far, and I think at this point Joyce is saying to me that, you know, instead of going on this back and forth submittal with the agencies, that she would like to have discussions with folks at management level about a different approach, I suppose, or a different way to do the exact same thing Lance just said. I mean, our goal is to get them in NMSA's hands and to get them out for public consultation. That's been our goal from day one, and it still is. Nothing has changed. It's just we can't seem to get there at doing this. You know, the type of progress we've had is just you know, we're running out of steam.
So, Dave, this Lance, so the McKenzie one is kind of the one we need to talk about further. So maybe we can schedule some time with Steve to go through the comments that we provided you in December and work through those, all three of us together. Because the issue is what we heard back from Joyce was there was substantive issues from our last comments that kind of put everything in disarray. And my view on the comments were they were largely just clarifications, editorial stuff that didn't change anything in the program like we talked about yesterday. And they should be easy things to work through. But the three of our agencies need to talk through these to see what the heartburn is.
Yeah, because I think that's where we're stuck. Mm-hmm.
Does that sound good to you, Dave?
It does. I don't have any different answer than I did yesterday, Lance, and I'll say it again, that I'm not working on these right now until I get further direction from Joyce.
Okay.
So do you have someone on your end that's talking to Joyce about this then, or?
Yeah, I talked to her last Friday about it.
Are you the one that directly talks to Joyce?
Yeah, and my boss.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the action forward here?
I'm not real sure.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
It sounds like Joyce is saying, don't work on it, Dave. So.
Yeah, I think my boss is going to talk to Dave's boss to see what the next step is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I think that is.
Okay.
As I said earlier, it's being worked at higher levels. Joyce has talked to Bruce McIntosh at ODF&W. She is trying to engage Rob Jones in a further conversation. And so, in essence, she's told me to stand down until she gets better clarification from that level. And believe me, I'd be happy to go back and work on these things, but that's not what I'm doing at this point.
I'll give you a call tomorrow, Dave, and maybe we can talk a little more about this.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Are we done now? Our next meeting is the third Wednesday of March. I'm not sure what that pans out to be.
Same as this
month. Oh, is it? Okay. Just before spring break, I think. Any parting thoughts from those on the phone? We're hanging up.
Thanks.
Okay.
I'll see you guys.
Talk to you later.
Thank you, guys.
Dave Lenhart
has left the conference.